What?
Speaker slips go right on the corner here where the city attorney is going to be sitting. All right. I'm going to just pick somebody. Zeke, how would you like to lead us in the pledge tonight? Come right over there. Okay. Pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, unto the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, this is the special meeting of Monday, August 10th, special meeting on redevelopment, and let the record show that all council members are present. And if you just got here, there are three pieces of information on the back there. Blue sheet, that's your speaker. These have redevelopment agencies. This number includes both cities that are larger and smaller than Morro Bay. When the final assessment from management partners of city services was provided, one of their recommendations was to form a redevelopment agency. Following that, the city council at both their goal-setting sessions in June of 2008 and February of 2009 determined that forming a redevelopment agency was a priority goal for the city of Morro Bay. Subsequently, the city council agreed to fund the redevelopment feasibility study, which you'll find on our website, and in early 2009 that report was released. In early spring 2009, and since that time, the city has worked on notification of the residents of Morro Bay regarding redevelopment. Just to recap, in total, since June of 2009, the city has had 5 public meetings / workshops. The feasibility study, as I said, has been posted on the city's website. A redevelopment presentation was held at the Biagini Business Forum on Thursday morning, and a frequently asked questions flyer went out with the August water bills. The flyer and the water bills, while lengthy, and we had a hard time figuring out exactly how much information was enough information, provided some excellent information about the process, as well as addressed such issues as blight, eminent domain, and project areas. Unfortunately, there have been some other flyers not produced by the city of Morro Bay that have been distributed door-to-door in some neighborhoods that don't have factual information and, quite frankly, have used scare tactics in terms of redevelopment. This is extremely unfortunate, and tonight one of our goals is to address some of those issues that have been distributed door-to-door and person-to-person and provide further clarification to the public. After presentations and public comment this evening, we will be asking the council to authorize the city to move ahead with the formation or activation of the redevelopment agency. If we move in that direction tonight, the city has an additional 25 tasks to complete before the redevelopment agency is finalized. Some of the tasks include determining what the project area is, discussion with other taxing entities such as the county and the school district, and preparing an eminent domain policy, as well as many others. Throughout the remainder of 2009, as well as into 2010, this year-long process will provide numerous opportunities for the public to provide input and public comments on those specific mentioned issues, as well as many others. In summary, tonight's action is only the beginning of a very fluid process with many other decisions coming after tonight and with much public input. At this point, I'll turn it over to Mr. Ambo, our Public Services Director.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, Council members. I'm going to go through this kind of briefly because redevelopment is essentially a revenue enhancement strategy. And one of the things I find really helpful when we discuss this is if we were given a choice, if we look at the overhead, which would we prefer to have, the larger slice of the pie or the smaller slice of the pie? I think most folks would say we'd prefer to have the larger slice of the pie. And that's precisely why we've initiated this action to form the agency. And then briefly speaking, we're talking about tax increment here. And tax increment is the amount, assuming the agency goes forward with this process a year from now, after conducting this rigorous and thorough hearing process, ultimately the tax base would be somewhat frozen, which means that all of the increase in assessed property values above that is essentially the tax increment, and that is what's used to fund the tax, the activities which are yet to be determined by the redevelopment agency in this process of formulating the plan that we've not yet begun. But this area in blue is what we're referring to in the next slide when we're talking about we'll go one more. When we're actually looking at that area in blue is the tax increment, and of that area in blue, we get 60 cents on the dollar versus what we're receiving today, which is 16 cents on the dollar. That is the fundamental purpose of why we've identified this as a revenue-enhancing strategy. Some of the other things I'd like helpfully go over with, there's been a lot of confusion about the blight analysis that was conducted in the feasibility study. The blight analysis, really, there are several purposes to redevelopment. First is to stimulate economic development. The second is to provide affordable housing. And the third is to eliminate blighting influences. So when we try to, in the feasibility study, which has been conducted, the consultants did this blight analysis to see if the city qualified to having blighting areas. And there are measures of economic blight, physical blight, and blight in infrastructure. And actually, it's a pretty rigorous analysis that identified 40 different factors. But the first and foremost thing I think is helpful to get across is that no blight analysis has been, no formal action has been taken. This was a feasibility study that shows that we have something to work with, but the only body in the community that can designate whether blight formally exists is the city council after project areas, which is the topic of a forthcoming discussion should the council be interested in getting into that conversation with the community. So I think the key things are there has been no determination made relative to the blight on the properties. And furthermore, when it comes to this prospect of why is staff designating properties as blighted, well, we do that by law when already. We've had to do it with each housing element update, when we've had to provide a housing element, building condition survey. For example, Christine, in the subsequent presentation on mine, we'll get into, we've used community development block grants. Well, we've used those grants before to do a housing condition survey. So this is what we do in a lot of areas. We identify, for example, hazardous buildings, unreinforced masonry buildings. By law, we're required to identify those. So this business of getting into and designated areas that are high potentials of, say, landslides or fire hazard areas or liquefaction or geologic features is something that we do by law on a normal day-to-day basis. So this really isn't anything different, particularly since we haven't even done anything yet. Well, this is just a feasibility study to see if we have anything to work with. I suppose from here on, I'll leave it over to Christine, and she can get into some of the housing programs.
Good evening, Mayor Peters, council members, community members. As you know, if the city does determine that they're going to move forward with the redevelopment agency, there is a requirement that 20% of the tax increment be set aside for affordable housing units. So what I would like to do is take a brief snapshot of where the city sits now with its housing, its income, and then some potential projects that we might use to meet those requirements. HUD annually updates the median income for San Luis Obispo County. Currently, it is $53,600. Looking at the household income for the Morro Bay population, 68% of the households overall are below the median income. 67.9% of those households are 65 to 74 years old, and they're also below the median income. And 81.9% are below the median income. And this is based upon 2000 census and our recent housing element update. So I'm sure with the current economy and, you know, how some of the retirement funds have been hit, probably this is optimistic. As of the 2000 census, there were 5,006 housing units, of which 2,770 or 55% were owner-occupied. The majority of those 66% are single-family detached units, with 6% single-family attached, and interestingly, 11% of our housing stock is mobile homes. The vacancy rate, which also includes rental units, as you can see, 83% is associated with seasonal or occasional units, so those would be some of our visiting owners. By age, 46% of the owner-occupied households are owned by people over the age of 65, so we have a very high senior ownership. 69% of the existing housing stock was built prior to 1979 and is over 30 years old. In 2004, as part of a CDBG grant program, we did do a housing income for some of the census block, which were marginal, could have been considered targeted income groups, and we wanted to see if perhaps they were. As part of that grant application, we also did a housing income or housing survey, housing condition survey, on those census block groups, which are targeted income, which means they're 80% below median income. 76% of those houses that were surveyed did have need of repair. So in conclusion, we do know that a large percentage of our households are below the median income, specifically our seniors. Most of the housing units are over 30 years old, and that financial constraints may impact those owners' ability to rehabilitate that housing stock. A large percentage of the units are seasonal or occasional units, and those owners may not be motivated to make those improvements without some type of incentives. Potential programs that could be utilized in conjunction with the RDA funds include enhancement of our existing owner-occupied rehab program, which currently is targeted for people who are 80% below in the median income. We could feasibly include some moderate income homes in that program at a low interest rate. The Home Buyer Assistance Program, currently the City of Morro Bay, because the land values are so high, does not qualify for any of the grant programs. We cannot achieve the feasibility analysis that's required to have a program like this. So the RDA funds could feasibly be used for a program like that for low-income and moderate households. Low-income housing development, we have a history with some of the housing agencies that have been successful in developing low-income units in our city in the past. Multifamily rental rehabilitation. Mobile home park improvements. Currently, our owner-occupied rehab program does include more than 7 newly constructed units, 520 substantially rehabilitated units, and 312 long-term affordability covenants purchased for multifamily units. In addition, the affordable housing expenditures were $1.52 billion, which was a 16% increase from the previous year. That concludes my presentation.
All right. And Rob, I think we go to you next.
Yes, good evening, Mayor and Council. I thought I'd talk a minute just about the eminent domain because I've gotten a flurry of emails and telephone calls regarding that and what exactly is eminent domain and how that relates to the redevelopment agency. And I'd start off by saying that tonight one thing is certain, and that is that no decision is going to be made tonight regarding eminent domain. Every year in California, cities and states purchase millions of dollars of property from private owners. Most of the time, government buys property from willing sellers. We've done that over the years on a couple of situations with our Market and Embarcadero property and with our teen center. Both of those were voluntary purchases from private sellers and purchased those through willing purchases that are not considered eminent domain. Sometimes, however, property owners do not want to sell their property or do not agree on a sales price. In these cases, California law allows government to take property from a private owner. That's what's called eminent domain. In just a brief nutshell, I'm going to go over just some of the steps that are required in an eminent domain. And first, the government must attempt to negotiate the purchase of property at a fair market value. Second, if the owner does not wish to sell, then the government must file a court action to exercise eminent domain and serves that notice and lawsuit on the private owner. Third, a hearing is scheduled and the government must demonstrate that it engaged in good faith negotiations to purchase the property, but that no agreement was reached. If the government is able to demonstrate that and that the use is going to be used for a public use, the property owner is given the opportunity to respond to the government's claims and is successful, then it moves on to the termination by the court of what a fair market value of the property is. The city currently already has this eminent domain authority. The redevelopment agency, if it is implemented and moves forward into the formation stage, allows for that also, but we currently already have eminent domain authority. However, the city has never used that authority since the city was incorporated in 1964. During my time as city attorney for the past 12 years, I've served with four different mayors and numerous council members. The city council has repeatedly stated that it would never take property from an unwilling seller. It has never threatened anyone with eminent domain. It has never gone past the first step in the process of negotiating with a willing buyer. There's examples of where the council has asked staff to investigate, do an appraisal on a piece of property, and contact that owner. But if the owner has said that they're not willing to sell, the negotiations have stopped at that point. In 2005, a U.S. Supreme Court case allowed a city to condemn private homes to make room for a manufacturing complex. This was known as the Kelo decision. It was passed back east in Kentucky. In response to that Kelo decision, California voters on June 3, 2008, adopted Proposition 99. It's entitled the California Homeowners and Private Property Protection Act. Proposition 99 prohibits any state or local government from using eminent domain to take an owner-occupied single-family home. Regardless of whether the formation of the redevelopment agency moves forward, the city will continue to have the authority of eminent domain under the law as Proposition 99. If the city moves forward tonight and begins the formation process, it is required by law to adopt an eminent domain policy. This adopted policy can be more, but not less, restrictive than Proposition 99 and would be determined only after community discussions and through the formation process of an RDA. From the outset, staff has recommended that the RDA, if formed, would only be able to use as eminent domain process on any other property than residential properties. This would be regardless of whether they were owner-occupied or renters.
Madam Mayor, I just want to follow up. You know, we've in your staff report, we didn't put the recommendation, but the recommendation is an attachment one. I'd also like to call to your attention, we mistakenly referred to the amount of moderate, low to moderate income money that would be designated for low to moderate income households. That is included in the $25.4 million projected, not in addition to. We have also identified a number of funding alternatives, if you'd like to get into that portion of the discussion, and reminded me to follow up. Even if the council did go forward and designate or go through this process, and there was an area that was identified as the project area, at the end of the...
As a commercial, only if there's not a caretaker unit or residential unit on it. So we have every option and intent, I believe, to do that with ours, should we continue to form it. But again, what you saw, the map, was a feasibility study to determine if we are eligible to form an RDA. It is not the final thing. We will have all your input before we come up with a final project area if we decide to go ahead. Okay, now, I'm going to start with the one-minute speakers first. So I'm going to call your names. If you haven't filled out a speaker slip yet, please do and put it up here. And if you'll kind of line up so that you're ready to go right after each other so we can get as many people in as we possibly can. So, you can have either comments or questions. If you agree with the comment, wave your hands. That works. Okay, Marvin Victor, followed by Stephen Marcatello, and then Royal Martin.
Good evening. Is this on?
Yeah.
That's a good question. Everybody asks that, don't they? I've never done this before, so. When I first read about this. My name is Marvin Victor. You want my address?
No.
Okay. My name is Marvin Victor. I live here in Morro Bay. I was very upset about the eminent domain because I've read about things, and I know of a couple, one that happened in Oakland. I'd like to add, eminent domain, we're, you know, mostly retired here, and you already know that. We don't make a lot of money. Even if you bought our house at probably the market value or whatever at one time, we wouldn't be able to move anyway. And so we're very concerned about what's going on because this is the American dream, and we want to keep that. But I want to ask you a question. You said you have no ideas or no thoughts of doing anything with eminent domain. Ms. Peters, I heard that you were asking, why couldn't we not claim vacant lots blight? Is that true? Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Stephen Marcatello and Royal Martin.
Stephen Marcatello, I live in Morro Bay. I object to the formation of this district. My objections are it will cost money to form for legal advice and to document. In this time of austerity and shortages, how can this new government be justified? This money is borrowed and will have to be repaid even if the projects generate insufficient revenue. Once the district is formed, citizens will have very little control over it. We cannot undo it. Its powers are broadly defined by state law, not your political promises. We will have to wait 4 to 6 years to see how this district will actually work. Its problems will not show up for years. During the 35 or so year life of this government, individuals both in council and staff will come and go. How can you assure us today that they will have integrity, that they will not misuse these powers? The district can define blight. If they say it is blighted, whether or not it is, it is. Your staff has unlimited time to comment. We are...
Okay, thank you. Okay, Royal Martin, Del Clegg. I'm sorry, please, no applause. And Sherry McKelvey.
Hi, I found out about this redevelopment project.
Name.
Excuse me?
We need you to state your name for the record.
Oh, Royal Martin.
Thank you.
And I live here in Morro Bay and I own property here. I found out about this redevelopment project a couple of weeks ago through a friend, not through any information that was disseminated by the city. And I have the property that was designated as blighted has rental properties on it, and they are very nice properties. They were built prior to the incorporation of the city, but I have kept them in excellent condition, and they are low-cost housing. So my tenants are mostly what I would consider like the working poor. And this inspired me to do some research into who was involved, who was under this blighted termination in the city. So I used the maps to walk the precincts in the different areas in the redevelopment district. And I discovered that the majority of the properties are residential, and they're smaller units, they're older units. What we would consider the rental ones would be low-income houses, and most of them were cute little houses. They weren't anything that I would consider blight.
Thank you. Okay, Del Clegg, Sherry McKelvey, and Bonnie Blackledge.
Okay. Hi, my name is Sherry McKelvey. I'm a 20-year resident of Morro Bay. I am not opposed necessarily to a redevelopment plan, but I am opposed to a redevelopment plan that would include any verbiage allowing eminent domain of residents. Are there other ways that their business is adding tax dollars to the city?
Okay, thank you.
Up there. And good evening, Madam Mayor, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Del Clegg. I'm a local businessman. And I'd like to take a moment. It's been a long day today, I think, for everybody in this room. I'd like to clearly state that I'm opposed to the redevelopment plan. I think that the overall plan has got a lot of holes in it. Its overall scope is overwhelming. I think the amount of percentage of space that it's taking compared to the total city is unreasonable. Usually most of these districts are pretty defined in scope. This one's going off the chart. The report's missing has numerous problems and information that's missing. There's no baseline narrative to this thing. There's no comparison. So this is basically a buy-it report, not necessarily a comparison report. And blight is an awfully subjective issue that's there. Mostly when I have consultants giving me information, they're giving me the pros and cons so that I can make an educated decision. And I just hope that you guys deny this. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Bonnie Blackledge. And thank you. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I oppose the redevelopment plans. Residential neighborhoods should not be included in this, and I have serious concerns about the use of eminent domain, and I'm hoping the City Council will not institute this. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, next we have Kathy Frank, Steve Eckes, and Robert Griffith.
Hi, my name is Kathy Franks. Hi, Mayor, Council members. I've lived in Morro Bay since 1996, and I live in a mobile home park, and I'm concerned with, like, if anybody's going to sell their unit, if it's going to affect our sale, if we have to say we're in a blighted area, because right now they're saying we're in a blighted area. So I'm opposed to it, too. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm Steve Eckes, a 10-year resident of Morro Bay. For 22 years, I served as general counsel to a redevelopment agency down in Southern California, and I just want to reinforce what your counsel, Rob, has told you this evening, particularly with respect to eminent domain. It was our experience with an eminent domain power that would cover commercial properties but not residential properties, that a redevelopment agency can be very successful and can be the engine for economic development in a community on a voluntary basis, working with the agency and with willing property owners, and that limited eminent domain power is sufficient, but it's important to have the eminent domain power applicable to commercial properties. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, Robert Griffith, and then Joan Solu.
My name is Robert Griffith. I am a Morro Bay resident. Have been here for, is it really 7 years now? Almost eight. I attended all four of my years at Morro Bay High School, and I'm now at Cal Poly, and I'm a straight-A student there, and I wouldn't have gotten there without the teaching I got at Morro Bay High School. Now, what I read in the Bay News and other sources, but primarily the Bay News, is that the money that would be going to the redevelopment agency, some of that for the short term would be taken from the school district. And I'm worried that with the districts already receiving budget cuts from Arnold Schwarzenegger, why should we borrow money for them now, of all times? I think we should find alternative sources of revenue if we were to adopt this.
Thank you. Please. Thank you.
Hi, good evening. My name is Joan Solu. Thank you for taking everybody's comments. I was glad to hear that you're considering or reconsidering some of the eminent domain issues. If you move forward with a redevelopment agency, I'd like to see you include the Morro Bay Power Plant. I believe it would be much easier to include it in the beginning rather than go through the difficult process of trying to add that property in later. I would also ask that you do your best, and I mean your best, most conscientious effort to exclude homes from any eminent domain. And I would like to see the RDA include businesses or commercial properties only. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any other one-minute speakers? Any new ones, Rob? Okay. All right, we're going to start. Oops, one more 1 minute? Okay. Why don't you come right up then?
My name is Joe Wallach, Morro Bay resident.
That was it. How many people oppose it? You know, because, you know, it's flat-ass communism.
Excuse me.
You just can't go rob people.
Okay, let's keep our language proper, please. Okay. All right. Okay, let's stay calm. We're going to start with the two-minute speakers now. We'll start with Bernadette Peterik and Rick Deschler, followed by Nancy Bast. And once again, if you're still handing these in, if you put your email address on them, we'll keep you noticed on future things that happen.
Hi, my name is Bernadette Peterik. And as far as a city forming a redevelopment agency, what is the rush to spend $210,000? The city doesn't have and needs to borrow the money. I'm shocked that parts of our city would be known as Slum Bay. And the effects that this would have on the property owners that are mapped blighted. Almost half of our town is in this area. This is not Wasco. This is not McFarland in the Central Valley. I believe you need to really think hard on entering into a 45-year commitment especially with no payback of any kind for at least 8 to 12 years. If you factor the upfront cost to set up an RDA, so I recommend not going ahead at this time. I feel it's a bad idea. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, please. We've got a really good, polite rule here that we don't applaud, we don't boo, we don't make comments. So waving the signs is great, but please, let's not do anything more than that, and we'll all be respectful that way. Okay? Thank you.
Rick Deschler, Morro Bay. It was touched on earlier by one speaker, and I would hope that the mayor and the city council would please, rather than use an impersonal term like other taxing agencies, specify exactly who is going to have their tax increments diverted for the next 45 years. Say Cuesta College, say Morro Bay High School, say Del Mar. List all of them so that everybody in the public and that all of you know exactly who you are going to be diverting these dollars from. It's not new dollars. It's dollars that are needed by all of these other agencies. I also disagree with the idea of eminent domain, whether it's for residential or for commercial properties. And I'm curious, this RDA that you're going to be establishing, all of this is upfront money. These people get their money. They get paid. These urban futures, the management partners, they get their money whether it pays off or not. I wish they would have guarantees in it, but they don't. Thank you.
Thank you. And after Nancy, we'll have Larry Burke and Susan Heineman.
There you go. Thank you. Nancy Bast. All blight indicators in the study were determined solely by external evaluation. It's been found that blighted properties are more likely to have low assessed valuations compared to other properties in Morro Bay. Does that explain why nice-looking little older homes may have been deemed blighted when next door also exhibit blight indicators but are not identified as blighted? In the study to determine properties that are considered blighted, of the 40 blight indicators listed, mainly 4 are used in the majority of such properties labeled blighted, and more than half are not or rarely used at all. Is this use of indicators weighted to rely on only a few conditions that skew the whole approach to determining alleged deficiencies in properties in order to create a drastic need for correction by the creation of a redevelopment agency? It took ordinary citizens to uncover many pages of profound reasons to throw this plan in the trash can. We can't begin to tell in 60 seconds or 3 minutes what's wrong with this 45-year plan. Most of the blight descriptions used would be laughable if it were not for the serious consequences to the people that received them. But the most grievous fact of all is that it has caused so many longtime residents, renters, and property owners such anxiety and apprehension about their homes and businesses to have this scheme suddenly thrust on them out of the blue. Whoever the arrogant and secretive perpetrators are should be run out of town, and you should consider it to be an expensive learning experience.
Thank you.
I'm Larry Burke, citizen of Morro Bay, and this evening I'm here to represent Michael Durick, who couldn't be here, and he sent a letter, and I'd just like to read part of that.
Susan Heineman, City of Morro Bay, reading for Wanda Durick. A shoe store is having a 50% off sale. A customer is admiring a pair of shoes. She wears size 7.5, but they have only 6.5. It's too good a deal, though, to pass over, so she tries to squeeze her foot into the size 6.5. This is the picture I have after studying the redevelopment feasibility study on the city's website. In recommending that Morro Bay pursue a redevelopment agency, the consultant hired by the city to do the study identified dozens and dozens of homes scattered throughout the city as blighted. The criteria for blight they used included many indicators that are not items of dire physical and economic liability, a condition required by state law. They used indicators such as poor site layout, damaged roof, or irregular parcel. Successful redevelopment in cities are those with readily identified areas of dire physical and economic liability. These areas are dilapidated, crime-ridden, abandoned, or mostly unoccupied. Do we have that kind of condition in Morro Bay? I think not by a long shot. Creating a redevelopment agency without a clear and identifiable need is putting the cart before the horse, a recipe for failure. Those 6.5 shoes will hurt and will not be worn. What a waste of money. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Dorothy Cutter, and I've lived here 52 years. Anyhow, I have some questions that I'm going to ask you, and I think you need to answer these questions before you vote on this. Okay, the first one is, why didn't you follow the management partner's recommendation to only look at the power plant and business district? They never said look at residences. Why didn't you include the information on the money you plan to spend on RDA in the budget hearings last month? And why didn't you notify the school district that you were planning to initiate the RDA, since it was recommended by the consultants that you do so before you vote, not afterwards? As a matter of fact, I called the superintendent of schools last week and our Morro Bay School Board representative, and they knew absolutely nothing about the RDA. Okay. Why did the staff report add the amount of money that goes to low-cost housing in their staff report instead of deducting it from the money you hope to get from RDA? And why are you spending over $300,000 on consultants and attorneys to raise money for the city that we do not have? This would fix a lot of potholes. And why have you not done some of the easier things to save money by negotiating employee contracts, since this is the largest expense the city has? And why are you tonight talking about hiring another planner when so little building is going on due to the recession? And why does your fact sheet include only positives of RDA and none of the negatives? And how will Sacramento, balancing their current budget by taking money from RDA, affect Morro Bay in the future? Also, why do you think spending $210,000 for consultants who are offering you a discount if you hurry up and sign on doesn't sound unethical? And then what do you say to property owners whose properties have been designated blighted that now have to disclose this if they want to sell their properties? And why haven't you divulged the fact that the city of San Luis rejected the idea of RDA because there would be very little money after dealing with the school district? And last,
thank you.
One
thank
last you. Thing, why does the staff have time to work on RDA but does not have time to come up with zoning that protects our neighborhood from incompatible development?
Thank you. All right, after John Barter, we'll have Bill Martini and Stephen Griffith and Elise Griffith.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. My name is John Barter, and I have a magic wallet here, okay? And my magic wallet, here's the deal. You guys give me $100 for this magic wallet, okay? And I won't give you any money back next year or the year after that or the year after that. But in the fifth year, I will give you the $100 back. And in the sixth year, I'll give you $200 back. And in the seventh year, I'll give you $300 back. And in the eighth year, and so on for 45 years. I think at the end of that process, you'd find that buying this wallet for $100 was a hell of a good deal. That's what you guys are struggling with here this evening, is the fact that this is a waterfall of money further down the road. You've got to invest some money now, and you've got to work things out. And many years down the road, it will pay huge dividends, as other cities have shown historically. But fear is a powerful motivator, and many of our citizens have been brought down here by fear, fear that their homes will be taken away, fear that something untoward will happen in their lives because of this horrible...
A lot of people have talked about the different issues involved here. I think go slow. Before even jumping in on this initial $210,000, I'm sure there's an upside and a downside to RDA. I see a lot of downside. I see potential upside, and Getting back to the upside, I think the original intent was the downtown area, the power plant. When they actually did the study on Morro Bay, it found out that it wouldn't qualify, especially the downtown area. And the only thing they could really kind of swing a net around was the residential areas. And I think it kind of lost the original meaning of trying to rehab the downtown area and use these funds to do that. And there is definitely an effect, with psychological or real, with the banks. If you're in a blighted area, you are going to have a stigmatism attached to your property. I know the city has the potential of increasing their tax base, but it can come at the expense of landowners. And, you know, you may not say so. The bank may tell you up front, we can't go that route, but behind the scenes, it does influence their decisions. So I think that you want to move slow on this. You want to think about it. You don't want to make a decision tonight. There needs to be more town hall meetings. And on another front, I know when you're talking about eminent domain, I think that's the 800-pound gorilla everyone's frightened about. A person earlier spoke that, yes, the city has used eminent domain or the threat of eminent domain. I will also say that we were threatened with it. It was discussed in closed door. As far as condemning a piece of our property for the boatyard. And like Rob said, it's very expensive, it's costly, it's not something that the cities normally do. Again, they decided against it in 10. Instead of going that route, they decided to terminate the water lease, or the water lease was terminated out in front. It's been a 5-year saga of us dealing with attorneys in the city over that issue. So, like I say, the city and that threat is very real. It's very big in people's minds. And to use eminent domain on commercial property, I think, is no more justifiable than to use it in residential areas. So if you are going to eliminate the threat of eminent domain, I think you have to do it for both commercial and residential, because I don't think it's fair in commercial either. So with those points in mind, just that the original intent of the RDA, I believe, was to encompass the downtown area, to encompass possibly the harbor and also the power plant. And so I think it's lost its initial purpose of forming an RDA. And like other people spoke earlier, I think the return, there's no return for approximately the first 8 years. And then you're into your 12th year before you actually pay for the amount of money it takes to form the RDA. So you're about 12 years out before seeing a return. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Stephen Griffith.
Yeah. Good evening. I'm Steve Griffith. I've lived here in Morro Bay for about 7 years now. We got pulled into this issue with a neighbor of ours whose property was red tagged, and there's a couple of things about this whole thing that I've been kind of looking into, and I think there's some questions that really need to be answered about this. And the first one, let's start with money. Money does not spin on trees. It does not come out of nowhere. It comes from somewhere. It goes to somewhere. So when Mr. Ambo is talking about we're going to get a larger slice of the pie by having an RDA, the question is, whose pie are we getting? That money is going somewhere now. It is funding real entities, whether here or at the state, federal level. There's no telling because we haven't been told. So who gets cut in order to make the RDA happen? That is something that needs to be investigated very, very thoroughly before you decide that this is worthwhile going forward with. The second thing is the tax increment. It fundamentally, if you look at this, this is really amounts to nothing more than land speculation. You're basing a tax increment on the belief that the property values are going to rise at the same rate they have over the last 10 years. I don't think that's a viable, justifiable assumption even 20 years from now. So that $25 million number that you're expecting to see from this is, well, really pretty imaginary. The second thing I'd like to look at is this, a statement in the July 7 staff report, and I'll quote, "In order to be successful, the City Council will need to focus on increasing the assessed property values in the project area and growing the tax increment for further redevelopment projects that stimulate investment within the community." The key word there is increasing the assessed property values in the project area. Most of the properties in the project area.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Elise, and then Preston, and then Jack McCurdy.
Hi, my name is Elise Griffith. I want to thank all of the City Council this week for all of the communication that we have all had, some of it very frustrating. But ultimately, I think it helped me to understand and get to the, you know, kind of the heart of things, both sides of this. That said, it's really sad to think that the way I found out about this was someone who is a renter in a home that was red tagged, coming to my door upset that he'd be thrown out on the street. And I had no idea of any RDA or plans for an RDA or anything else in the city, and I do get the water bill. But I'm going to state, because this is important, in the water bill, I remembered later, this little bitty quarter slip of paper that said, we're going to have a meeting, an informational meeting about a redevelopment agency in Morro Bay. You, all of you in the city staff, should be ashamed of yourselves for that, because what most people think, which is what I thought, was that, great, we're talking about downtown, the waterfront, get more parking, bring more people in. That's terrific for all the business owners that I know here in this town. That little blurb said nothing about large swaths of Morro Bay that were homes, where people live. And that's what I said on the radio on Friday. If this was such a wonderful thing for Morro Bay, why was it not enthusiastically promoted throughout the town? That's what should have happened. Given that, we as citizens here also have a responsibility to the people that we elected. And I'm talking now specifically about the council and the mayor. We have a responsibility to you. Shame on me, as my son would say, my bad, that I hadn't been aware of some of the things going on. Frankly, I watched hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of council meetings where everybody argued and nothing got done, and I stopped watching the council meetings. And then I would elect, and I'd think, okay, they're going to take care of it. Not a problem. That was my bad. I've learned something from this, and I hope we all have. If we're going to have any hope for Morro Bay's future, that means we must communicate with you, and you are responsible to communicate with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Preston McKelvey. I've been a resident in Morro Bay for over 20 years, and I am a small business owner. I am opposed to the creation or further pursuit of an RDA at this time. I'm not necessarily opposed to an RDA, but I don't think it makes sense at this time. And I want to thank you, Mayor Peters, for responding to my emails and correspondence, and I appreciate that. If the city decides for an RDA, I'm vehemently opposed to eminent domain for private development. I don't think that's been stressed here. Private development. I believe eminent domain can be a useful tool if it's used for public services, such as freeways, on and off ramps, bridges, walkways, whatever. Yes, the city has the right to eminent domain. Yes, the city must, by law, include eminent domain in an RDA. As the city attorney pointed out, eminent domain cannot be less restrictive than state law. And the city has never used eminent domain powers and vows not to. Why not write it into the code? There's nothing that says the city cannot make it more restrictive. Make it more restrictive and state the city cannot take property, residential or commercial, for private development. Secondly, the purpose of an RDA is to clean up blighted areas. Areas are designated blighted due in part to code violations. At this point, I've heard the cost being $210,000 for the formation of this RDA. At this point, the city's broke. We're in bad economic times, and I think this is a poor way to spend our money at this point. Spend the money on code enforcement officer to enforce the code violations. There's laws out there to clean up the neighborhoods. We can take a patrolman from the police department and make them a code enforcement officer for little or no added cost. A recent article stated that the city wants to use an outside agency to form the RDA because it anticipates legal challenges. Why do we even need to go there if this is so controversial? If we anticipate
become reality, even though the study made many recommendations along these lines, we have been led to believe that all that is irrelevant. And as the latest staff report put it, it's just a feasibility study. But the staff couldn't completely dismiss that study and hasn't when it found useful to do so, because otherwise it would be admitting that it is urging the council to form a redevelopment agency with nothing on the table. No broad outline of how much such an agency would look, what the scope would be, no idea of the process that would be used to change the properties ultimately designated as blighted, no hint of what all of it would cost taxpayers and what the financial benefit would be to the city. Oh, there was one estimate in the latest staff report. It's estimated a $39 million gain over the 45-year life of the agency. But that turned out to be, quote, a mistake, according to Councilmember Grantham, who discovered it. The real figure is $11 million, or about $240,000 a year over 45 years. The staff wants the council and community to embrace redevelopment with virtually no information on how it would work, how it would affect the community and individual residents whose properties could be labeled blighted. This is a classic case of the cart before the horse. Trust me, it'll be okay. It's like putting your money in an investment with little or no knowledge of that investment. None of us would do that. Why should the council do that with our tax money? I want to make two comments quickly, if I can, about Proposition 99. Yes, it does ban use of eminent domain with occupied residences, but it has many loopholes. Just go read Prop 99. For example, it could be seized for health and safety reasons to combat crime, as vague as they are. This council may vote 5-0 not to use eminent domain, but what happens to another council 5 years down the road? It could do so with a vote. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and council members. My name is Linda Merrill, and I live in North Morro Bay near the Mobil Chevron property and also Main Street area of San Jacinto that has been identified as blighted. This is yet another scheme that causes turmoil in our city. A lot of people are upset, and I want to thank everyone who came here tonight to express their views. This redevelopment agency will use the old saw, robbing from Peter to pay Paul. It is a black hole of administrative costs, and I am totally opposed to any selling municipal bonds. I do not want our city to go into debt. The consultants were told to come up with ideas. Well, they sure did, but we should have told them, come up with good ideas. All of this is coming down on us, and I feel like we are being railroaded into this proposition. I read in our Reno newspaper, and that's where I used to live, that there was an entire block that was planned for redevelopment. A street was abandoned. The city was trying to help. It's called First Street, but the developers bailed out. And now we have this totally unfinished so-called redevelopment area right on the Truckee River. It's a dang mess. This scheme presupposes that the city is better at making economic discussions than the free enterprise market. If it made sense at all, it would already have been done. this feels just unnatural to me. There's just something going on here that I don't understand. Who benefits from this? I'm opposed to this redevelopment area, and I think it is just a pie in the sky. Please, please do not do this. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ed Valentine and Pamela Crail.
Thank you. I'm Ed Valentine, the superintendent of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. And I'm not here tonight to intercede in the affairs of the council or in the affairs of the city of Morro Bay, except as it touches topics of mutual interest to us. As I've read through the proposal for the RDA, it's unclear to us in the school district at this point in time whether this is going to be neutral.
Is that tall enough? Okay, my name's actually Pamela Craig.
Okay, sorry.
And lived in Morro Bay since 1955. From what I understand on the redevelopment, when you look it up under HCD, which is Housing and Community Development, there has to be an 80-20 ratio. In other words, 20% of the places have to be blighted. And then I pulled up this paper from San Diego. And you're not able to just include another house in order to get to this 20%. My house was built in 2004. It's been considered blighted. When you look under HCD for what blighted stands for, I'm a little nervous. The redevelopment of which is necessary to effectuate the public purpose declared in this partly urbanized area, which cannot be reasonably expected to be reversed or alleviated by private enterprise acting alone. So in other words, when you blight something, you're saying this economically cannot be fixed. I can't go out and hire a contractor to fix a roof or whatever. Areas may not be included for the sole purpose of obtaining allocation of tax increment revenues from which such areas other than substantial justification for their inclusion. Unblighted, non-continuous, conclusive properties. So in other words, if you have one that's blighted and you have a property next door, they can also take your property because it's going to be deemed necessary. We want to put in 12 units. Oh, this one house will only fit 3, so we need both of these lots. And you can declare eminent domain. I was on the eminent domain trial for Montana Darrow, Suicide Hill. So I really, really think that you need to look at the definition of blight, and you're basically, in order to get the funds from the government, you have to have it. From what I understand, you have to have a feasibility plan adopted. If it's not adopted and approved, we don't get government funds. And once a plan is adopted, the voters are not allowed to vote. You, city council can do what they want. It's in this paper also. No direct citizen vote to affirm or deny the formation of a redevelopment agency. All they have to do is listen to us by public input. So basically, from what I understand, HCD, Housing and Community Development, designates blighted areas throughout the state. They've done one in Barstow. They've done one in Lancaster. They do these for these areas specifically that are in need of housing for low-income housing. Now, obviously, the state has not declared Morro Bay that terrible yet.
Thank you. That's all the speaker slips I have. Anything else? Rob, do you have any more speaker slips? Okay.
Someone at the back's holding up one.
Okay. Please come forward.
Thank you. My name is Dolly Carraza. My parents moved here in 1950, and I was 10, and I have been here ever since. I raised my children here. My children have raised their children here. They've attended the schools, and I worked for the state for 25 years. Now I find out my property is blighted. I'm very upset. I'm not real knowledgeable about it, but I did want to come forth and speak and put my two cents in. My property is almost an acre, and it's on the creek, and it's not dangerous, but the houses are old. And whatever I can do to bring it out of the blight, I will try to do. I am retired. However, one of the ladies was talking earlier saying how it affects people and how they become upset. Well, I'm one of them. So I thought I'd come and express myself. Thank you.
Thank you. One more?
Yeah, I'd like to maybe offer, first of all, my name's Andy Hamp, offer a few suggestions to the council. I think before approving an RDA and going ahead, you maybe have to give a few more specific recommendations on the eminent domain policy issue, commercial, residential, yes or no, the scope and the scale, what are the areas, and do this before going through the formation process. And then also maybe some assurance that the consultants, the lawyers, the staff time doesn't get out of hand, not just in the formation, but down the road, maybe incentives and repercussions for the planning staff. But, and then when you have these recommendations, perhaps you should put it to a vote of the people. Take it away from your desk and have the populace vote on it. Just a suggestion. Thank you.
Kids, but his lot isn't straight. So it's blighted. You know, it's not just if the paint's peeling, you know, it's a lot of other issues. And my husband's question, he couldn't be here because he's coaching football today, but if we're in a blighted neighborhood, and now when we go to sell our house, it's in a blighted neighborhood, then does that mean we get a tax break for our property taxes?
Thank you. Anyone else? No, just come on up.
Good evening. My name is Jenny Brantley. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. And thank you for holding this forum for us to discuss this. As a professional realtor, it would be a material fact if a house were designated as blighted. I think the choice of word blight is an unfortunate word. It could be a different word, perhaps. I like the redevelopment agency idea. I think it's a great plan. I can understand the fear that is involved. I own a property that is designated blighted, and I could look at it in two ways. I could say, oh no, my property is blighted. Now I have to disclose this if I go to sell it. Or I could say, great, something's going to happen now in my neighborhood. Something potentially really great could happen. The houses around me that, you know, you say, what do you do to improve our community? This is really possibly a way to improve the community, I think, though there is obviously fear when anything like change is confronting someone, and this would be a powerful agency to be sure. And with power comes action, and possibly some actions could be held. I have faith and confidence, though, that thing. I in spite of some of the comments I've heard tonight, I do have faith and confidence that as a community, nothing bad will happen. You know, I think that's the fear, is that something really bad will happen to somebody. Is something bad going to happen to me in my house or like that? So I'm publicly stating I'm for it. And like I said, as a professional real estate agent in this community, I think it will, in the long run, be a positive thing for Morro Bay.
Thank you. Anybody else? They keep coming.
Bill Todd from Morro Bay. I actually am a resident and a small business owner. And I'd say one of the biggest things I see in this room here is not a lot of communication going on here. I mean, I know you guys send those things out in the water bills, but I don't read those things. I mean, I pay a bill, but that's pretty much they go in the trash can, you know. But just a couple things. You know, I understand what the council's talking about and the market value of the property if it was eminent domain. And I noticed most of the properties that are on this, there's a majority of them are auto repair businesses in the blighted areas. And So obviously I have a concern there. And then they were talking about eminent domain. And I mean, are they factoring in the fact that this feeds three families? I mean, what's fair market value for that? You know, and so I just a little concerned about that. And, you know, the thing is I think the biggest thing I see here is just a miscommunication that I wasn't informed. A lot of these people in this room weren't informed, and they were informed wrongly. They were, you know, got something from somebody that, you know, was everybody was scared pretty much. That's how I was. So, I mean, isn't there some way that the council could come up with some kind of way to communicate with people, like a sign like how Los Osos Valley Road and that intersection, they have a sign there that lets us know what's going on, you know, because I'm just not up to speed on this stuff, you know. But I do appreciate what the council does. I appreciate you guys' time that you put into this thing. But and I'm not against the redevelopment, but I would like to see some type of verbiage in there about the eminent domain, because I think there's some real big issues there. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. I'm going to bring it back to council. Thank you all for your comments. We are going to answer some of them, and I've made a list. Hopefully I've covered them all. First of all, I do want to take this chance to say I do apologize if the first you heard about this was a scary thing. Oh, my gosh, your house is going to be seized. Your house is red tagged. You're blighted. It's terminology that's used in this process that we didn't choose. It is what it is. You have to have a feasibility study to determine whether you're eligible to do a redevelopment agency. We figured that a redevelopment agency might be a good thing for the city. This is the process we have to go through, and the terms are what they are. We didn't pick them. We certainly didn't go around and say, ooh, what a blighted house. No. We love our homes. I mean, my house, probably you just look at it from the front, you'd say, yeah, blighted, needs paint, needs a roof. I know that. So I'm really sorry if you started out being afraid because of what, and try a little bit harder to do it well. I know Noah's got an email list that he sends around to a whole bunch of people. The business forum, the chamber has email lists. You know, we're trying to utilize all those things, but we need you to help us a little and pay attention too, okay? So that said, anybody else want to add to that? Go ahead.
Yeah, I would. As you've announced earlier, we would be, because of the number of people here tonight, and that has been part of the conversation as we've gone through this process, is how to get the word out. And I would like to find out what we could do to collect emails and contact information tonight. So regardless of our decision, which most likely will include continued conversation any way we go about this issue, that we have an opportunity to directly contact you that are interested in receiving at least an email update. And I know your announcement came out a couple of times during tonight's hearing, but it was during times where people were shifting around, and I'm not sure how many people actually heard that invitation. So I'd like to find out how we could, at this point, at least have a sign-up for email addresses or something along those lines for people that would like to be notified as we move through, because I think we really need to take advantage of this opportunity of people showing up and really displaying the care that they have for this discussion.
We can put a piece of paper and a pen at the door, and as you leave, give us your email address or email it to us. Check out, we're all on the website. You can send it to us, and we'll make sure you get on the list.
Okay. And you did mention my listserv update, and I do send out a community update that includes every city council meeting's agenda. And if you're interested in signing up for that, you can find it. You can sign up at the website, which is morrowbaycommunityaction.org.
Any other comments before we go to answering the questions?
I would just like to add that I think that the onerous responsibility is on us, the council and the city, not on the people, and that if we have a good idea that we need to, if we have any idea, and I think this has been a long-standing issue for us as a city, and that it's not a new issue, but it's one that we apparently have not fixed yet or addressed, and so I would like to see us take responsibility for that.
Well, I took some, but I think it's a two-way street.
Rick? I agree. It's a shared responsibility.
Okay. Answering questions. First of all, somebody questioned me on saying vacant lot was blighted. The lot I was referring to is on the corner of Main and Harbor Street, and it was
set for a senior housing project a long time ago. I was surprised it wasn't included in the blight area that the survey did. That's that answer. Okay. Let's see. Money sources. Bruce, do you want to run by, you know, where is the money going to come from this? How is that working?
Yes, Madam Mayor. What we've identified are a series of three options for funding. I think it's important to point out that the majority of the funding that we've identified in any of these is past grants that we have obtained. So there's no general fund money from the sense of spending money from the large majority source of the funding alternative. So what we've identified is past program income from the Community Development Block Grant. That's a grant that the city had from a discontinued Community Development Grant, CDBG program, from a long time ago, and that's money that the council felt was a good source and use of funds. The other proposed recommendation for funding is affordable housing in lieu funds that are in a fund that is specifically identified to provide affordable housing, and we keyed the amount of the affordable housing to 20% that corresponded to what was mandatorily required to be spent by the agency for spending money on affordable housing. And lastly, we've identified a loan from the risk management fund to be paid back at whatever terms and conditions the council would like. It could be keyed to the local agency investment fund. I went over this with the city manager and the finance director. We've also identified another alternative source, which is funding this in two fiscal years. So, for example, you'd split the amount up and pay half this fiscal year and half in the next fiscal year out of any combination of those funding sources. And lastly, we've identified the possibility of reassigning part of the Measure Q money that was spent on the apparatus bay and refunding that money back to the Community Development Block Grant Revenue Fund, which would, in effect, make the project entirely grant-funded at that point. So okay. We'd be happy to get into more options.
And the reason we didn't include it in our budget discussions was?
Well, we didn't know. Maybe the city manager over this.
Well, main reason in the comments were CDBG funds can only be used for certain purposes. So these funds that we're talking about can't be used for potholes or for some of the other things that would be great if we could, we couldn't. When we do our budgeting, we only budget general fund money, and this is money that's coming out of CDBG grant monies. If you don't go forward with this, then they'll sit in the...
And then we had the results of that, and this identifies a study, and a plan has not been developed, nor has any property been designated.
Okay.
Or redlined.
And I think it's important to point out, tonight you're not forming. There is no formation. There's no final decision being made regarding a redevelopment agency, regarding what area is blighted, what is not blighted. Those are all decisions that will not be made tonight. Your decision tonight is whether to further fund this process to move forward, which under the law requires notice to all those property owners, notice to the school district, notice to the county, notice to Cuesta, and the series of those workshops and community outreach to decide what the formation would be, what areas would be included, and what the eminent domain policy and programs would be that Christine went under. Those are all things that occur over a lengthy process. If you want an analogy, I think if you're going to analogize this to a football season, we're in preseason. We haven't even begun the season. It's a long process that takes over the next year.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, and the school district, obviously, Mr. Valentine was here. We have other representatives of our local schools here, too. They are aware of it. We did notify them. So believe me, they're going to be part of the discussion. They have to be. They're going to be affected. Even if this was to go ahead, we're not taking money literally away from them. We're just not giving them the increment at the time. But it could turn into something that we could do for the school district as the money accumulates. So there's all of that to be decided. But don't put the cart before the horse. We haven't even got to defining all of this. I'm sure all of us have some real definite ideas about what should and shouldn't be included in the ultimate district if we decide to form one. It hasn't been decided yet, and you will all be part of that discussion if we do decide to proceed. Who benefits? The city benefits. Anybody else want to talk about who benefits? Christine, go ahead.
Well, I think we're taking a much more, by law, we're going to make sure that affordable housing benefits, so we have to. 20 cents on the dollar has to be spent by affordable housing. The general community, I think of it as every dollar that's spent on redevelopment is one less dollar that's spent from the general fund. So to a certain extent, any actual and administrative costs are shifted onto the agency. So operationally, that's a cost savings to the city and a benefit in terms of expanding the resources available for full-time emphasis on economic development.
Somebody else mentioned code enforcement, and I do want to respond to that one. Yes, we could get a code enforcement officer out there and say everything that's wrong with everybody's property. We don't do that. We're complaint-driven. If a situation becomes so difficult that it's impinging on a neighbor or something like that and they complain, then we do code enforcement. That's how a small town operates. And also, a lot of those people that have homes that probably need repair, telling them they need it, they probably already know, but they can't afford it. And that's something that we recognize, too. You know, we're not going to go out and penalize people for not being able to afford to replace their roof or paint their house. Rob, did you have something to add on that?
Well, no, I just go back, even though that we are complaint-driven or anything, again, the funds that are being used for this project could not be used for a code enforcement officer. Right.
Okay. Rob, respond to the eminent domain comment that Mr. Wallach made, please.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between, I guess, threatened and discussed. But to begin with, Mr. Cunningham disagrees with the allegations made by Mr. Wallach under penalty of perjury in a deposition. He disagrees with that. But regardless of whether he disagrees or whether you believe what was said or wasn't said between Mr. Cunningham and Mr. Wallach, the more important thing what I said is this council has never threatened, nor has the executive staff threatened anybody with eminent domain. Has it been, as Mr. Martini said, discussed? Yes, we have provided options to council as to what their options are, but there has been no threat of eminent domain. We have not proceeded in any way with the legal action to do that or any type of letters or anything that would require that under the law. It's always been discussions with willing sellers and willing buyers. So that answers that. I believe it answers that the best I can.
To follow up on that, definitely one of the concerns we've heard is that, yes, that's been the policy to date and very clearly of the council as we see it now, but what could we do to develop a more strongly defined definition of how eminent domain could be used in the future or how the current council would see this potentially moving forward and to make sure that that is never adjusted? Can we legally make this impossible to be changed into the future as far as the things especially related to residential and owner-occupied, non-owner-occupied properties?
Certainly. Now what we go by is California law.
Okay. And also, somebody said, you know, you can't vote on anything. Yes, you can. Every 2 years, you can vote on who sits here and represents you. That you never lose that. And I think that's a very powerful thing. So, all right. Anything that I missed?
Mayor Peters?
I think those were all the questions.
Excuse me. I'd just like to return briefly to the affordable housing issue and the fact that the $14 million is really, it becomes cumulative when you partner that with grants that you're able now to achieve because the leveraging gives you additional competitiveness for those grants. And so if you take that $14 million, you partner with the grants that you can obtain and then also with the developer participation, it's more than that.
Okay.
A quick follow-up question, Mr. Schultz, along the lines of the comments about private development having an influence on eminent domain and how that could be applied, would that also be able to be included in such an ordinance?
Absolutely, and some of it might already be. There was a comment about possibly you could take these small homes and McMansionization them and develop that into something else. And I want to assure that the public that we do have some major protections, and I think we're even looking to strengthen those in the future. But one of them is the Coastal Act requires a one-to-one replacement of any affordable housing. So if, in fact, there is affordable housing, those renters or anything, that, even if you didn't strengthen the law, still have protections under our normal local coastal plan an ordinance as it require a one-to-one replacement, and that's why we were able to keep a lot of our mobile home parks that are in existence right now, because the owners of that know that they could not tear those down and put large homes on them, because that's not allowed. There's a one-to-one replacement for any affordable housing. But you can strengthen that through an RDA, and you could strengthen that through our own process, what I think Councilman Winholtz has begun that process.
Okay. Any other comments? All right. We've got 15 minutes before we have to start our regular meeting. Do you want to have our discussion now, or do you want to continue it to the regular meeting? Want to go ahead now?
I'm ready to discuss.
All right. Who wants to start? No?
I'll
want to start?
Sure. I'll jump right
okay.
in and try to make it quick so we can finish this discussion as much as possible. I'm really excited to see the number of people that are involved here tonight, and I would agree that we as a council had not gotten the word out enough. And from my investigations of redevelopment throughout the last couple of years, I've come to see it as something that can be a really excellent tool for a community to address some of the main issues that we have, which would include infrastructure and some of the other things we've heard about tonight. And I personally would be really excited about addressing some of the sustainability issues and resource efficiency opportunities that are really expensive, but through a redevelopment agency we could develop programs that could potentially aid businesses, homes, and the city itself to address those issues. That being said, another thing that I found as I've done my research and listened to presentations is that it's essential for a redevelopment agency to be successful that there is full-scale public support and buy-in from the beginning, and that this is not a process to be rushed. Every community representative or staff member that I've talked to outside of Morro Bay have stressed that. And at this point, I'll be honest and say that I think we are moving too quickly through this process. I'm not wed to trying to capture the 2009-10 year as our baseline. I am intrigued by redevelopment agency as a concept for us. I think it's essential that we include discussions with our stakeholders as our due diligence work before we proceed any further, because as we've found from the case study of City of San Luis Obispo, they did that work beforehand and came back and realized the amount of effort and energy that was going to go into redevelopment was not going to return what they were hoping once they had talked to the stakeholders. So with that, I'll pass it on and continue to listen and be part of the
discussion. Could you clarify a little bit more what you're talking about? Are you saying have the discussions about the area and everything first before proceeding with...
Not the area, but specifically to have some informal discussions with the stakeholders. And at this point, I haven't seen a clear list of who those would be, but from what I've found, it would be definitely Cuesta, the school district, the county, and I think potentially Dynegy Power Plant Company because of their size and potential influence on this redevelopment. To me, the amount of energy that would go into this process warrants that due diligence on the front end so we can have a clear idea about what return we may receive and what barriers may come up along the way. And I think that this is something that once it's initiated, we are very much going on a very rapid downhill pace that would be hard to stop. And also,
this is from our staff report and from the two previous staff reports that talked about that cautions the council that if you commit to increase that if you do this, you need to commit to increasing assessed property values in the project area. So if we stay, even if we say we're not going to do eminent domain in residential areas, it says we're committing to increasing their property values. Well, then how do you do that? And so that, I think, is where the rub comes for the person who owns the house or any house in that area. So, and I don't know what that word commitment means. You know, are we going to take our time and let them improve them a little piece at a time over 40 years? Or are we anxious to get that money and we're going to do some kind of encouragement, you know, to get that in the first 10 or 15 years? So, and I appreciate that staff put that in there. And then I just think the other, that it's, if we're not committed to that, then it says that it's not a prudent idea to go forward at this time. And so I think that's where I'm coming from.
Okay, Rick?
Well, thanks everybody for coming out. Thanks for all the emails and all the phone calls, which part of that makes me think the word did get out. And you know, I don't want to hurt anybody. I don't want to kick anybody out of their house. I don't want to affect anybody's livelihood or affect their business. And I don't think any of us do.
Not negatively.
Goes without saying. I wouldn't support an RDA that entails eminent domain. I would prefer an RDA that excludes residential at this time because I feel that we have too much commercial property that might be able to use the help. And I don't think that, I don't know, that people really should be obligated to participate. I think we offer them grants, we offer them low interest loans, we let people try it. Other people see what happens, they see the benefits of it, and they'll probably want to come on board. I've had comments from I don't like being in the blight area, I don't want a redevelopment, and then I've had other people call and say, how can I get on the blight list? You know, you're not going to please everybody. That's just the way it goes. The only place I would accept eminent domain is regarding the power plant, because I feel that there's regulatory agencies that when you do have the eminent domain, you get a little bit of kick behind you. And when it comes to mitigating industrial pollution or industrial blight, things like this, you have a little bit of force behind you, some regulatory agencies. So, and we would need that in dealing with someone with deep pockets like the power plant. I'm not going to live and die on this year's tax base. I don't think that next year's is going to be that much different. If we can't get this thing pushed into this year's, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. I think that the things that we do decide to do regarding eminent domain and other sensitive issues that the community is concerned about, that they require a four-fifths vote in the future of any council that wants to change anything that we've done. Believe me, it takes a lot to get a four-fifths vote out of this bunch. Other taxing entities, we talked about that briefly. In other taxing entities, there's negotiations that goes on with the city and these entities, and those entities have to be made full. You have to make up for things with the high school and the college, that you have to make up for the money that they're not going to be getting somehow. And that's up to our city negotiators to do that. Like I said previously, I think that the business district needs it more than residential. So I'd like to see the areas change to maybe Main or Morro Bay Boulevard. But I've got a lot of citizen feedback on this, and no matter what my opinion might be, we have to listen to the citizens of the community. That's why we're here, and we have to do their work. We've tried revenue enhancement things in the past, like talked about public utility user tax. We've talked about paid parking and these kind of things. None of it's ever worked. We haven't been able to pass any of it. This is something that isn't going to cost anybody anything unless they decide that they want a low-interest loan to perk up their business or such. And these... We don't realize these enhancements until there's a change of property. That's how this thing works. You sell the property at a higher price, and we regain that tax from that.
And I think that it would definitely be a huge effect on how the schools would be funded, because we're not a basic aid district. I'm concerned about the staff hours that it would take at this time to work on a redevelopment agency, and also the funding that we did not budget for. I think that the $200,000, no matter how we break it down, break it out, it's still going to come from our general fund. Whether we borrow it or not, it's still coming out of there. I question the value of the return over the 45 years of how that breaks down, and what it costs us up front to get there. How many years, if we add the power plant, it extends out how long. If we change the areas that they've blighted for us and include our commercial areas, it changes and breaks down how much longer before a return. So all those are a lot of factors, and I just I don't feel like this is going to be the time. We don't have the community support, and without that, it makes it pretty difficult to move forward.
Okay, one question. Andrea, it seems to me you did contact the school district, right? I want to get that.
The school district actually contacted us, and we let them know that what was happening tonight with our presentation, and that no decisions were being made tonight. And they responded that they understood that, and to let them know. We did let them know that we were happy to sit down at the table with them at any time, but at this point, we didn't have specific numbers for them.
Okay. Okay. Apparently, I didn't hear it, but apparently, on a radio show last week, I was said to be the person pushing this whole thing. Actually, the first time this came forward, Dave Elliott was pushing it, and I voted against it. Second time it came forward, Management Partners and Melody DeMeritt pushed it. I voted against it. Both times because we didn't have the funding, and it was going to cost us money. This time we do have grant funding available, and it's an unusual and wonderful situation to have funding available to do something for this community. I've looked, as Rick said, we've looked at other ways to raise revenue. We don't have a very, well, the power plant isn't running as much, so we're not getting that money. The fishing industry is being regulated almost out of existence, although we're doing our best to bring it back and make it viable again. But it's not going to be, I don't think, ever where it was. Those were our two main sources of revenue. We don't have them anymore. Tourism is down. It's down. We heard that tonight. There's a lot of people in town. It looks good, but they're not spending money. Tourism is our only revenue source now, and the money that we make from sales tax and things like that is not enough to pave our streets, to provide help for low-income housing, to provide assistance to our businesses. It's just never going to be enough. And you look at, you know, when I talk to the other mayors and what have they done with their redevelopment. And literally in Grover Beach, John Scholes said, I got people begging me to put them in the blight area because they want to be able to use those funds available to improve their businesses and their homes. There's some amazing things that you can do with redevelopment, many. You talk about talking to the school district and everything first. If we're gonna designate with your help, with the community help, if we're gonna set up what the redevelopment district is, that affects how much the school will be affected. You can't put the cart before the horse. We gotta figure out what the area is. If what we're gonna do is take away all of the residential areas, and I'm not saying whether that's a good idea or a bad idea, but if we take them all away and make it only our downtown commercial areas, there may not be enough to make it worthwhile. There may not be the blight level that you have to form a redevelopment agency. That's why the residential areas were included. And please, staff, jump in if I'm saying anything wrong, because I'm finally, you know, it was finally the light bulb went on and I understood this process. So it's really a balancing act. Now, we can say if we decide that we would rather, okay, let's put together with a meeting or a workshop that we have, what would we like to consider in the blight areas, and we decide we only want to include the business areas, and they say, hey, ain't going to work. Then the whole thing's moot. But if we do that, you have to understand the price that you pay down the line of not being able to make these improvements to our community, of not being able to provide low-income housing, of not being able to pave our streets. I mean, there's a lot of things that we're just never going to be able to do based on the sources of revenue we have. And they're not growing. I'm sorry. They're not. Certainly the tourist industry, the bid is going to help. We're going to advertise more. But spending is down, and I don't know how long that's going to last. We've got businesses down on the Embarcadero that are very threatened right now. So there's a lot of really good things that this can do. So if we need to think about it more, if we need to have another workshop or something and miss the deadline and forfeit that money, if that's the council's feeling, but you gotta at some point take the leap and say, you know, this is the right thing to do for our city. And to start the process and do that discussion within the process, I don't think is a bad thing. Rather than try and do it beforehand and not have all the advantages of being in the process and having your work be actually productive within the process. In other words, if we do this separately and then have to go back and go through the process anyway, we're going to be repeating ourselves. So with that said, I'd like to see us go ahead and have the community input in the process and have it work. And if we don't, if at some point after that community input and everything, we decide, hey, ain't going to work, we can stop. But I also agree, no eminent domain, and we can put that in very strongly.
Madam Mayor?
Yeah. I'd like to offer a different perspective on some of the comments that you've made. My feeling is that we have more than just tourism for our income. We have sales tax, which is both local people putting in as well as tourists. And we have our property taxes, and that's what we're trying to enhance here with an RDA is the property taxes. And as one of the gentlemen said to me when I was going around to the businesses last week, he said, you want to give me money to improve my property so I can give you more taxes. And so he wasn't real comfortable that we were trying to get him to have to pay more taxes. That was a long-term thing. And I think that's the part that maybe people are uncomfortable with. And I think the other half of that is also maybe not so much fear. Well, fear, but I think it's legitimate in that when you talk about trying to raise the assessment of people's properties, it could be as little as an improvement or it could be as much as completely changing the character of their neighborhood. And I think that's where I'm coming from, that I don't want the character of my town changed. I like my little houses. I like the little houses that provide affordable housing. And to say I'm going to knock those down in order to provide bigger affordable housing doesn't work for me. And so I'm happy that we want to keep our character. And I think you made a good point in that there, one of the maps in our document says that this is what is the required area to make this work. And that area included people's residences. So I think I'm ready to stop the discussion. And if at some point when we're in a better position to talk about this in a year or so, I would be glad to come back to that. But I think right now I'm done with it.
Okay, I want to make very clear that I was not talking about taking away any homes. I've never felt that. They've never talked about seizing homes, eminent domain on homes, nothing, never. I don't believe in that. I absolutely do not. So please don't.
I inferred it. Okay, yeah. Then I apologize because that. Okay. But what I have heard you say is that you have not, unless you're ready to tonight, said that you're still in favor of eminent domain for commercial area.
No, actually, I'm looking at taking eminent domain out completely.
Okay.
I don't think it has to be there. I don't think it's what we need in Morro Bay.
Okay. That's
we
great to hear because I think
we don't
did
need
say that
removals.
The last meeting.
We need improvements, not removals.
Mm-hmm.
That's my feeling.
That's good.
I would like to say a couple quick things, but at this point, I think this conversation is important enough. We had talked about ending it at 7 and
yeah.
Moving it on to following hour, and I think we are perhaps getting close to some sort of a motion that would be effective and move us beyond this conversation while we have the company that we do. So I would move that we continue this conversation for a specified amount of time to get some resolution.
Yeah, I don't think we have to do anything right now. We can keep discussing. But
great.
If you've got a motion you want to put forward, go ahead.
Well, you know, at this point, I think what Ms. Winholtz has brought up as far as action into the future has a lot of merit because of the short-term challenges that we have economically, the workload that staff currently is facing. I think there are so many questions about the future of redevelopment and so many challenges in the short term that at this point, realistically, I would suggest that we're at least a year out from having the conversation about formation. And in my opinion, yes, perhaps it's better to let this drop off the worksheet until we get further along in the conversation and we have a better picture about what the future of redevelopment is for the state. I talked with a representative of the League of California Cities, and at this point there's a major lawsuit that's about to be filed by the League against the state in regards to their takeaway that is proposed, which is up to $3 billion. And the crystal ball is very much hazy about what the future of redevelopment is, what the future of the funds that are currently available and how they and what we would like to see ourselves to be as we grow. And I think that's a really important discussion that we have not successfully resolved. And that, to me, is a hurdle that should be addressed much sooner than we get into a conversation about, okay, how do we speed up this vision? Because at this point, I'm not comfortable that we have a vision that's clear. And in my opinion, that's a much more important first step to get to the point where we would actually work to promote that vision, if that makes sense.
Okay, we should get to some kind of discussion conclusion because we do have people ready for our next part of the meeting.
I just want to add that, you know, if the primary source of this or one of the primary sources of this is to certainly enhance our revenue with the state's continued raids, not just right now as Mr. Smugglers alluded to, but continued raids on the RDAs, I think right now is not going to be the best time because the state's in dire straits and going to keep going after RDA money. So,
The only thing is we have nothing to raid. There's nothing in our RDA funds to raid, and there wouldn't be for 7 years. So hopefully, yeah. I mean, nobody can tell what's going to happen, but hopefully in 7 years the state budget won't be in such a flux where they're doing things like that. But let them go ahead and raid us now. They're not going to get anything.
That's true.
And, you know, I hate to just take it off the calendar. I think we're very sensitive to safeguards. We're very sensitive to the eminent domain issues and not using them on residential and commercial. We've already said that. Like I said, the only place I want to do that is the power plant because we're going to need that when it comes to dealing with them. But I kind of feel bad about, or you know, it's nice to have all these nice little homes and everything's status quo, but we keep the status quo. We don't do anything. We're not going to be a city much longer. We will go back to the county because we won't have the money to pay the bills. Simple fact. So rather than just take this thing and end it, I would prefer to continue to talk about it. I don't think we have to make a decision even tonight. Like I said, I'm not married to the tax base. But I think there's still things people need to learn. There's still issues that we need to address that the citizens are concerned about. And I think we can still make this thing work. But we've got to do it right. And I agree, we shouldn't rush into it. But I don't think we should kill it at the same time.
I'd like to move that the table.
Before you do, let me just have a question. Bruce, if we did not make a decision tonight and wanted to explore at a workshop, public workshop, what we'd like to include and would be willing to include in a redevelopment district, could we do that, get an idea of what the community would like, what we would approve, and then decide if it's even worth going ahead? Could we do that as a next step?
You certainly could, but it would be my recommendation not to do that.
Why?
Because, A, we're not the ones that did this flight analysis.
Right.
And, B, what we're recommending is a process where we have those consultants sitting at the table and the people that do this statewide and are familiar with why these areas are configured the way they are and why areas are left out. That's part of the process we're describing or proposing to do. So one of the comments is, well, why don't we just do the process now and say that's what we're going to do? Well, the process is a process. Citizen input is valuable and important. And we need to have all those people sitting at the table to get a thorough involved community discussion. And we would be remiss in our professional capacity to say I'd be willing to sit down and do that, because I was surprised too at the findings. I was serious when I said we didn't know what the findings would be about the feasibility study. We were disappointed we didn't get Main Street Morro Bay Boulevard.
We bring the consultant back to have a more full discussion of why they chose what they chose?
You're going to have to pay for their money and their time.
And I know.
And look, the other thing I'll add is they are not looking for work. I don't know if we're going to be able to get them back here. I'm sure we could, but they are not in any hurry. They've got more work than they need.
Because it seems to me it'd be better to put, you know, whatever money it costs to get the consultants back to have a more thorough discussion of why they chose the blight areas they did and whether the blight areas that we and the community might approve would be sufficient to form an agency before we go ahead and spend the money for the whole agency.
I'd be happy to get a proposal for them. I don't think it's going to be that compacted of a process. I think we've seen, to a large degree, quite a bit of misunderstanding about what's being talked about here, and I think there is behind just getting into the nuts and bolts of configuring a potential project area, there's a lot of background work and just what really
it was. Grant money, Mr. Hempel?
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Okay, discussion. I think tabling it at this point would be cutting off our nose to spite our face. I think that if we can get them to come back and discuss the area that we would like to include to be able to bring in revenue to this community for the future, I think that's really valuable and we should consider it. Okay. Any other comments? All in favor of tabling the discussion?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Okay. 3-2, and the discussion is tabled. Okay. Okay, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll start our regular meeting. Okay, if I can have my council up here, please. We got a lot of work to do. Carla, Noah, we need you up here, please. Wait, are we going to grab what? Okay, now we will bring our regular meeting to order. Boy, that cleared the room, didn't it? And what we're going to do is we're going to move very quickly through announcements, go to public comment, because I know some of you are waiting for that public comment, and then we will go to our public hearing item. Okay? So, announcements first. Anybody on the council? Nope.
Yeah,
Rick?
Quick.
Okay.
Did you have any? I should have put this on the overhead, but the Morro Bay Police Department is going to start a Citizens Academy, that'll be beginning Thursday, September 3rd, continuing for 9 consecutive Thursday nights at the Morro Bay Police Department. And the Academy will provide community members with an inside look at the police department and the many facets of law enforcement, including history of law enforcement, community policing, investigations, crime prevention, and more. The course topics will include department history, conduct and ethics, traffic control and collision investigation, Slo County Witness Program, Victim Witness Program, the DARE Program, Crime Prevention Community Programs, and much more. So if you're interested in attending the Academy, which doesn't have to be a first step toward being a police volunteer, but if you're interested in doing that kind of thing, you need to do this first. Contact Hank Roth, Crime Prevention Coordinator, at 772-6228, or stop by the station, pick up an application. Thank you.
Noah?
Okay. Carla? Yes, if I could just share my real quick minute with Captain Knuckles, who's filling in for Chief Pond tonight, to share about our new hire.
Sure. His name is Mike Telmich. He's been with us for 6 years as a reserve paramedic. He has 16 years in service in the paramedic. He's well respected in the paramedic world. He started a week and a half ago. He's on his sixth shift, and he's on a 18-month probation period.
Thank you.
Okay, and my only comment, usually when we have the moment of silence, I'll say if we've lost any community members that were very dear to the community, and we did have Elizabeth Betty Flerke passed away. She'd been very involved with the Chamber of Commerce and other city agencies, and we'd certainly give our sympathy to her family. Okay, staff reports tonight are Harbor, Rec and Parks, and Public Services. Joe, you want to start?
Certainly. Thank you, and good evening, Madam Mayor and Council. The recreation—I have about three things, really short this evening. The Recreation Parks Commission met last Thursday, and they did elect a new chair. That's Chair Christy Hale, and a new vice chair, which is Johnny Munoz. We did form a ad hoc subcommittee consisting of two RPC members. Johnny Munoz being one and Commissioner Judy Mahan being the other. And the subcommittee will primarily meet with staff, and we will start the public outreach and community outreach for hearings and workshops to develop the master plans for Coleman Park and for the Target Rock area. So your concept plans moving forward is going into the initial public hearing outreach. We were contacted and had some conversations with Michelle Leary, and she and her crew of from the Central Coast Sport Fishing have agreed to adopt Centennial Parkway, which will be a huge asset to our staff. And so we want to extend a thank you to Michelle and her crew, and we certainly hope to look forward to a long-standing and a mutual beneficial relationship. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Rick?
Hi. Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council. You may recall earlier this year you authorized release of a request for proposals for lease site 9696W Whale's Tail Restaurant. The existing lease will be up early next year. We requested proposals at the end of July. We have received three qualified proposals. We've scheduled a date for an internal selection panel of August 20th. We will hope that the selection panel and the city manager will make a recommendation to council at one of your meetings in September. And at that point, you will hopefully choose a preferred proposer and a secondary proposer. We will authorize them to start the planning process and go through concept level plan review at the city planning commission and city council after that time, which no doubt will extend somewhat behind March of next year. We would be authorized to enter into a long-term lease based on the plans and future approval. So that's the process. Okay. And I think I'm pleased with receiving three qualified proposals. We also did hear just Friday that the Corps of Engineers has awarded the dredging contract that they had out to bid. They had an engineer's estimate of $5.5 million, and that's what they originally budgeted. The actual bid, low bid, came in $7.7 million. They were able to reallocate additional ARRA or economic stimulus money. They awarded the entire bid. The contractor should be on scene in mid-September. We'll actually see some activity in early September. They're hoping to start them in mid-September. It could be early October before the actual work starts. Thank you.
Pardon me, but a question is just to review what the resolution has been with the dredged material as far as how we will handle that.
So we had a lot of discussion on where we would put the dredge material for the State Park Marina because that material does not meet the general 80-20 rule. If it's higher than 20% silt, they won't let us put it in the ocean without additional testing and review. This material that the Corps dredges in the designated federal channels is all at least 20% or less than 20% silts. More than 80% beach grain size material. In other words, it's almost all from the ocean because it's in the front end of the harbor. So that material all can be placed in either the near shore disposal site or the beach disposal site. This bid has the contractor's option. Depending on what type of equipment they're going to bring up, they can use either site. The beach disposal site is only available after September 15th or October 1 if they don't get a special approval from the state parks because of the snowy plover issue on the beach. This equipment, the contractor is AIS, who owns the electric dredge in Santa Barbara. We anticipate that they will be bringing up an electric dredge, an hydraulic pipeline dredge that will be using beach disposal. It's a pretty good piece of equipment, has advantages of the electricity. We haven't had a permanent power drop installed here yet, so this will be interesting. I'm still waiting to see how they're going to figure it takes quite a bit of power. And so there's some issues that we'll have to watch, but I think it's a good piece of equipment, a good fit, and we'll see a pipeline hydraulic dredge disposing on the approved Morro Creek beach disposal site.
Okay, and Bruce?
Madam Mayor, Council, probably the biggest news that we have from Public Services is that we've completed and released the nitrate contamination study for the Turl Valley. That study is available for review at the library, our office, the City Hall, for reproduction at the ASAP Reprographics, and is also available on our website. There'll be additional and forthcoming public outreach processes behind that, but giving some folks some time to read and digest the report that's available. I can also bring up, and it's another item on your agenda, unfortunately, we had Commissioner Woodson resign from the Planning Commission, so the city clerk will and the council will be interviewing for a vacancy of that position in the near future, I would imagine, and hope. Anyway, that's all I have.
Thank you. And closed session report, Rob.
For tonight's meeting, council met in closed session on one item, real property negotiations. The city discussed all the city titlands, trusts, and the lease terms and conditions associated therewith. No action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Okay. And my apologies, but I forgot to bring the name of our business person. Is our business person still here that was going to speak about their business tonight? Yes, please come forward and tell me your name. I'm sorry. I didn't bring the... Bring my note. Please introduce yourself and tell us about your business. Yes. You've waited so patiently, and then I forget your name. I'm really sorry.
I watch this stuff at home.
Carpets, tile, all kinds of things, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Everything you could want to put on your floor. Everything you could want to put on your floor.
Anything you want on the floor. Hardwoods, bamboo, seagrasses, wools.
Bamboo, that's good stuff.
All kinds of green items. There's...
Shag?
Tile, yeah, shag's back. all kinds of tiles that are commercial tiles that are all green, all made from stones and vegetable oils. And there's just the green's a big thing. But we got it all. Great prices. You're almost getting at cost, basically, just to
and
stimulate,
local.
stimulate.
Indoor and outdoor?
Indoor, outdoor, yeah. We basically, since I'm born and raised, I know all the local guys, I refer you out to the local installers, and they're all licensed, bonded. It's one extra way to save that markup that normal stores would mark up on install. You're bypassing that, so it's
okay.
Kind of a good deal.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Okay.
You take care.
Okay, now we will open our regular public comment period. Thank all of you for being so patient. I know it's been a long evening already, but please come forward. We're very interested in what you have to say.
Wow, what an evening. My name is Marilyn Glessman. I am a resident of Morro Bay, and I'm here representing Dahlia Days, which is coming up this Saturday, and we're hoping for a better turnout than we had last year. It was a great year. Some of the things we're going to be doing is we're going to have dahlias, of course, okay, a display. We're going to have a plant sale. We're going to have cookies, homemade cookies, and Nancy Johnson's famous lemonade, which is...
lavender.
Yes, it's so good. So it's free to the public. Come one, come all. Thank you very much.
Where's the location?
Oh, Community Center. This Saturday, 1 to 4.
1 to 4.
Okay?
Right.
See you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor, council members, my name is Virginia Hiramatsu, and I'm a resident here in Morro Bay. I would like to report on the Relay for Life that took place last weekend at Morro Bay High School. We had 12 teams, 88 participants, 34 survivors, and we have raised, so far, $11,758.25, and that's with only 2 months preparation. More checks have been received since the event, and we can accept more money until the 31st of August. The money raised goes from this event goes strictly for cancer research and helping cancer patients. If anyone is interested in, to contribute, they can contact either me at ACES Transcribing 772-6157 or Andrea Klipfel at Edward Jones 772-6188. We would like to thank all the sponsors of the event, and they include Top Dog Coffee Bar, who provided coffee, fresh fruit, and muffins throughout the entire event, Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, Rabobank, Edward Jones, Doc Bernstein's Ice Cream, Spencer's Market, Morro Bay High School, Albertsons. We would like to thank Councilman Rick Grantham, for who came to the event, showed up, and was very helpful throughout the event. Andrea Klipfel and I will be the co-chairs for the second annual Relay for Life next year. It will be at the same place, and it will be after the fair this time. special thanks goes out to all who participated in the event, all the team captains, committee members, and everyone who helped to make the Relay for Life a success. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and council members. My name is Marlis McPherson. I'm a resident of Morro Bay and the chair of the Morro Bay Winter Bird Festival. And I am here to speak to the issue of co-sponsorship of the city for special events. As you may know, the city of Morro Bay has been a co-sponsor of the Bird Festival for 13 years, since the Bird Festival started. And it's been a mutually beneficial relationship for the city and for the festival. The festival brings in tourists in the dead of winter, Martin Luther King weekend, for 3.5 days. They stay in the city, they eat in the city, they buy gas, groceries, souvenirs, etc. So thereby generating sales tax and occupancy tax revenues for the city. And essentially, it costs the city nothing really to sponsor the Bird Festival, because we do pay leasing fees at the special events. And I would recommend that you do a cost-benefit analysis. And if the benefits that you receive from city sponsorship outweigh the costs, I would think you would want to consider it, providing, of course, that it's consistent with the goals of the city. So I urge you to continue to support the Bird Festival. Thank you.
When is the Bird Festival? You. Bird Festival is in January. Okay. January, Martin Luther King weekend.
Good evening. I'm Maggie Higgins. I'm a resident of Morro Bay, and I'm the treasurer of the Morro Bay Winter Bird Festival. I'm here to tell you that the Morro Bay Winter Bird Festival does not have much money. We're on a very tight budget for a number of reasons. We saw a decline in last year's attendance for the first time, and we had to cut our budget accordingly. We don't know how the economy will affect the upcoming festival. In an effort to boost attendance for next year, we're working to improve our website and marketing. But if our attendance declines again, it could well be the last Bird Festival, as we would be left with insufficient funds to prepare for another festival. We certainly cannot afford any increase in rental fees. We need and depend on city sponsorship, and hope you will continue to provide it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi there, my name is Kathy Wells. And before I start, I'm a resident of Morro Bay a long time. Before I start, I got to say, Ms. Peters, you're really doing a good job of backpedaling. You're getting better and better. I watched the end of that last meeting. Anyway, I'll talk about what I came here for. As I said, my name is Kathy Wells, resident of Morro Bay. I'm here to speak about the proposed conference center on the Embarcadero, which is scheduled to be put to the Coastal Commission sometime in September or October. If the meeting is in September, it's going to be held in Eureka, California, which undoubtedly is much too far for anyone who would like to have their voices heard regarding the proposed conglomerate of a conference center at 833 Embarcadero. Regardless of where the meeting is to be held, I would ask anyone who is interested in stopping the overdevelopment of our beautiful, quaint city and waterfront to write the Coastal Commission with their thoughts on this project. Times are hard. We need to stand together as a family and a community. The city of Morro Bay, i.e. Janice Peters and Rick Grantham, seem to think big development is what we need to entice more business, thus chasing out business owners who have spent their life savings building a business and have been here more years than one can count. This is only to have developers come and make the Embarcadero look like some place we will not recognize anymore. The elderly owner of the existing business, the outrigger, Violet League, would like to express her sincere gratitude to the overwhelming amount of citizens in our community that have supported her during the last 4 years of her continuing battle with the city of Morro Bay, i.e. Janice Peters and Rick Grantham, and their big plans to destroy our small town while not caring whose lives they change in that quest. Violet, myself, and countless other citizens are asking the public to continue to stand up to the bureaucracy of the mayor and those on the council who stand behind the destruction of our waterfront. If you would like to have your voices heard, please write the Coastal Commission with your opinions in regards to the development of a conglomerate convention center in the middle of the Embarcadero. Letters may be sent to California Coastal Commission, attention Mike Watson, 725 Front Street, Suite 300, Santa Cruz, California, 95060. Once again, that's the California Coastal Commission. Attention Mike Watson, 725 Front Street, Suite 300, Santa Cruz, California, 95060. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, Councilmen, Councilwomen. My name is Dan Andrus. I'm the principal of Morro Bay High School. I'm accompanied tonight by Janet Gould, the principal of Del Mar Elementary School. Our assistant superintendent, Mary Matakovich, would have been here, but she is unable to attend tonight. We came tonight to thank the city council and the mayor's office for working with the school district on the Public Educational Government Access Fund money, the PEG money. We're encouraged by the opportunity to, first of all, increase our partnership with the city and things that will benefit our students, increase the opportunities they have. The PEG money is specifically going to be spent to develop a video productions class that will allow elementary, middle school, and high school students to use video production to produce videos to air on Channel 20, the public access channel.
Hale, and again, as far as the outrigger, I'm again against tearing it down, and because I think that's old Morro Bay and some of the things that the tourists come to see. But what I'm talking about, Whale's Tail used to be the Four Crabs. That was a seafood processing plant, and as far as the previous owner of the Whale's Tail, I remember when she was here a couple of years ago congratulating her on taking over the Whale's Tail, and now I think it's out to bid because somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million needs to be spent to obtain that lease site. What I'm primarily here for to talk about is the water lease site in front of the Whale's Tail. We have a need in the working waterfront of Morro Bay to keep it a working waterfront. A restaurant is fine on the land area, but there's been the past issues of, again, the tug not having a location. That would work for the industrial tugs. It would also work for if you wanted to bring in the Lynx, excellent location, even the Chablis. So when you actually let out these lease sites, I don't think necessarily the land and the water necessarily have to be connected, that you can actually keep it a working waterfront for the boats and the industrial ships and that, and yet still have a restaurant where they can be compatible. So I guess without rambling on, I would suggest when you put out the water lease site that you consider something like the Lynx or the tug operation or the Chablis as far as using that water lease site in conjunction with the restaurant so that it remains a working waterfront. And on that note, I know there was discussion at the Harbor Advisory. There's a liveaboard ordinance later on today. There was discussions as far as the sanitation in the bay. And I think there's people in the audience here that talked about a solution on inspecting some of even the non-liveaboard type boats in the bay, because they also tend to have facilities that don't meet current standards. It, I don't think, is that big of a deal to start a slow inspection process on all the boats in the bay, whether they're liveaboards or not, because they all tend to have the potential to pollute. The harbor office, I don't believe, is that busy where they could possibly combine this with part of their operation. We have a proposal will be coming forward with mariculture. It very much is concerned with the water quality in the bay, and I think you might consider encompassing inspecting more than just the liveaboard boats for sanitation to clean up the bay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to the council. Any comments from the council before we move on? Okay. Our public hearing item, item B1. This is an introduction to include a new section requiring any person riding a permitted coasting device at the skate park to wear a helmet, elbow pads, and knee pads. Joe?
Good evening, Mayor Peterson, Council. Tonight, we're talking about the skate park and operating it as a non-supervised skate park. Currently, the skate park is located at Coleman Park, down on the Embarcadero, and over time, the elements or pieces down there have deteriorated because of the weather. And so part of the process, staff has contacted Skateway, which is the manufacturer of the material and the elements, and they've agreed to replace all the pieces under a warranty. And so we're in the process of having those warranty items being replaced and shipped out to our location. And instead of putting the new pieces right back into the old environment, we felt a change should take place. And so we've deemed that the skate park should be moved over to the Teen Center at 231 Atascadero Road. It is master planned to be at that site. We have no money to develop that master plan. So as an interim, we have applied for and have received the temporary use permit to operate the skate park in front of the Teen Center in the parking lot. Small modifications need to take place, resurfacing, a light slurry seal, and some fencing, which will go up. And in turn, what you've done is you've allowed staff to operate a skate park for the benefit of the community and visitors at almost zero cost. An unsupervised facility would warrant no staff time during the hours of operation. We would be able to utilize Teen Center staff to open and close the skate park, but not monitor or supervise it. So the ability to close down and open is a big factor. We've checked with other cities. Some of them have no fenced-in skate parks, but they do have the ordinance. And it's been rather cumbersome and a difficult task for police to amend this particular staff report and ordinance to amend the Morro Bay Municipal Code, Chapter 10.54, and to include a new section, 54-065, requiring any person riding a permitted coasting device at the Morro Bay Skate Park wear a helmet, elbow pads, and knee pads. This concludes my report. I'll be open for any questions at this time.
Okay. Questions, Rick?
Hi, Joe. So I understand that the reason that they weren't required to wear these things before was because they had supervision at the skate park. Now we're concur with that?
That's true.
Okay, so now we're moving them in to a teen center place that's unsupervised, but we're requiring them to do these things. If they're unsupervised, who's going to make sure that they're abiding by what the ordinance says?
You make a good point. Earlier I said that they were mandated only by rules of the skate park and the rules that we implied to the skate park. When he goes to an unsupervised skate park, the health and safety code 115.800 states that you need to have an ordinance so you can enforce the rules. So yep. So they took it from a rules to an ordinance and allows enforceability. And also included in this is proper signage, education to the community the participant that's going in the skate park. So when they read the signs, you have to wear these. It's a city ordinance. It has a little more leverage than just rules of the skate park. And that's why we feel it's important not only for the safety of the participant, but also meeting the state mandate.
So there will be nobody checking to see, though, if these ordinances are being followed?
There would be, obviously, from time to time, a patrolman driving by. There may be staff that witnesses somebody and makes comment. Something that's going to be a passive enforcement, again. Maybe not as passive as some of the other ordinances that are on the books, like smoking on the beach, per se. But this is something that deals with the safety of the participant and obvious signage and education to the community is going to be part of staff's quest.
Councilmember Grantham, I will add that we do have staffing at the teen center. There's always two people at the teen center, so I would anticipate, especially at the beginning of this program change, that we would make certainly a concerted effort to go out to the skate park and inform the skaters. We see that we have a pretty set group of skaters that come out and skate, and I think that, you know, letting them know what we're expecting. So there's not going to be somebody at the skate park on site, but there will be somebody, two people at the teen center at all times.
So the skate park won't be operating when there's not staff at the teen center, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, other questions? Betty?
With this addition of the fence, is it a chain link fence? I'm concerned about the visuals, and I'm concerned about lighting. But if it's not going to be when the teen center's open, the teen center's sometimes open at night, so is lighting an issue?
Lighting would be an issue. This would be an unlit skate park, operated only during, obviously, daylight hours.
Okay.
And so it would have those hours posted.
And it
would be a chain link fence. This is a temporary use permit. It is a temporary location. And everything about what we're doing is in the vein of being temporary.
And could you define temporary? Are we looking at a year, a couple of years?
Right now, I believe the permit is for 6 months, and then we have an ability to extend that, I believe, two or three more times.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps that, you know, staff right now is still searching for revenue sources, mm-hmm. to fulfill our master plan of the teen center.
Mm-hmm.
So we're developing Friends of the Teens that hopefully will help us with that quest. So there's some positive things happening out there. It's just a little small step in the grand scheme of what we're trying to master plan. So it's a small step. It saves you $19,000 and some change as far as staffing the skate park right now down at Coleman. So we've relieved some of the burden on the general fund. We think we're going to open up more hours for the participants of the skate park and maybe offer some more diverse programs at the skate park for little kids and maybe some competitions between local and skate parks and kind of show them more what we have to offer, which is a little bit more than just a skate park.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Other questions? Carla?
So is there a liability waiver or something they have to sign to use the skate park?
Basically, what you're seeing is that the ordinance, and through the reading of this and the signage, puts the risk of participation on the person who's using the park.
So
very similar to what we did when we posted the BMX track. It is biking at your own risk. There's mandated safety gear. But basically, it's a self-directed activity.
And any?
I don't believe that they're allowed to do that. It's public sidewalks. They're not allowed to skate there. It's tough to enforce them. Mm-hmm. It'll be a little bit easier to enforce when the area is fenced and somewhat monitored but not supervised. So to get 20 people at the skate park, it will be a good day at the skate park. But I know that you're saying that's a potential problem for – and there's some responsibility placed on parents when their kids are maybe too young. And not appropriate time for them to be there, then they need to take responsibility. But again, it's a self-directed activity that we're offering the community.
And will staff be monitoring, that will they be enforcing then the rules of it, or are they going to depend on the police department or somebody to come and enforce that?
We do not plan on directly monitoring on a routine basis every hour, every half hour of operation at the skate park. So basically, I'm saying that we're want to operate an unsupervised skate park. It's very common. The San Luis just did this. Santa Barbara's done this. A lot of your communities are doing this, and they're saving to the tune of $19,000. And I understand that there's a risk factor, but I think that the city is willing to take on that risk and fulfill the obligations of the state code, health and safety code, as well as any concerns that the CJPIA might have. And this is in line with that authority as well.
And it is in line with that. You've checked the guidelines.
San Luis Obispo has we've talked with the Betsy Kreiser over there, and she's gone through this just about 3 or 4 months ago.
Okay. And in the past, you charged, I believe, $2 to utilize that. So is that fee no longer going to be charged then?
Correct. There's no fee collection at the gate. It is unsupervised, self-directed.
Okay. And what would the approximate cost be to put up the portable fencing and all those things that you said?
The permanent fencing?
No, the portable fencing fencing and all the things we need.
The improvements to the site, we are working with a contractor. We have surplus material that we're trying to liquidate, either in credit for installing and offsetting the cost, or going out and selling it and reimbursing ourselves through that process. So we're looking to surplus the materials that we have now to pay for the improvements at the teen center.
Well, one quick question. Is Cayugas an unsupervised skate park, right?
Correct.
Okay. No?
Yeah. I'm glad that you've done some diligence in looking in to make sure that we've minimized any possible risk that the city has. And I've spent some time at unsupervised skate parks at a safe distance from any skateboarders or skateboards as well for my own health. But what I've noticed at those parks is that there usually is a really good culture of nurturing between the older skaters and the younger generation. It's become somewhat of a family there, and usually it's a really good situation for interaction between different generations, in my observation. Just curious to know when you anticipate potentially this move finishing or getting close to being finished, so we can keep our eye on that date. And we have talked about potentially doing a bit of a celebration with that date and kind of a outreach about the master plan with the teen center in general to help with awareness.
Thank you, Councilman Smuckler. Well, we are talking days and weeks, not months or years. The material is en route. It will be stored, working on the surfacing this week and the fencing next week. And if the material comes in, we'll probably store it in a safe place. And then, like I said, we are working on this particular ordinance. We're working on liquidating surplus materials. We are lining up competitive bids for the improvements. So everything's pretty much in full swing. So we are looking at, I would say, weeks, not months right now.
Great to hear. The other thing that you have mentioned is the former sites down along the Harbor Walk is currently planned to be a temporary outdoor basketball court. As we proceed with the further vision, that could potentially change. But for the public's awareness, there will be another basketball court to get your game on.
Okay, this is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this item, please come forward. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to council. Discussion and or a motion?
I'll move approval of B1.
Second. All right, we'll give a second to Betty. She was louder. And all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, thank you. All right, now, we got people out in the audience. Oh, I'm sorry, you have to read it, don't you? Sorry. I always forget
this
that.
This is ordinance number 551, an ordinance of the City of Morro Bay, California, requiring any person riding a permitted coasting device at Morro Bay Skateboard Park to wear a helmet, elbow pads, and knee pads.
Thank you. Okay, we got some people out in the
audience. Of eventually working to include recreational boats within our monitoring program, as has been suggested, and I just wanted to bring that up as more of a question about when we might have that discussion down the road, and perhaps where we are as far as that discussion happening. It sounds like there's some interest in at least building into that program. I know at this point it's not something that we have budgeted for, but There have been some ideas floated about how we might be able to begin the program in a way that isn't intense on the existing staff that we have available. I think that question's directed at Mr. Elkin.
I couldn't tell if he wanted to respond or was just sort of throwing the issue on the table, because as you know, then you've been watching the Madam Mayor. Thank you very much. The Harbor Advisory Board has recently had a discussion on potentially expanding an inspection program to other vessels than liveaboards. I think it's fair to say the Harbor Advisory Board did not vote to support making a recommendation to the council at their last meeting to expand the inspection program. It probably is a process issue that, as I understood the proposal, the most recent proposal, it could very well fit into maybe a future revision of this ordinance and the concept of broadening this to make it not just for liveaboards, but potentially inspection for more general inspection for sanitation devices on all vessels. That's one place it might fit in, or the subject could be, of course, brought up by the Harbor Advisory Board or City Council in a different manner. But yes, I think you also identified an important issue at the same time that the City Council is, you know, in general looking to cut costs wherever we are, wherever we can, and specifically looking at, you know, there's a recommendation to the management partner to contract out Harbor Patrol services. And so I find it kind of ironic that in the other part of it is, okay, let's expand a level of service and of the Harbor Patrol. So I think that these discussions perhaps on, you know, roles and levels of service might have to happen too before we would add another level of service at this time, was one of the recommendations I made to him, or suggest the City Council add another level of service in the harbor.
Thank you.
Okay, any other comments on this one?
I have a little bit. I guess it's clearing up some confusion, and I think I wrote you an email, but I didn't get to see the answer in case I'm sure that you responded. But I think it comes off this discussion that was at the Harbor meeting last week, which I did not see, but I have heard about. And so was that directed strictly at recreational boats? And what was the reason for not wanting to do that?
The idea of expanding the inspection program was originally a broader idea, maybe all vessels, and most recently suggested that just a small sample of all vessels, not just liveaboards, be started. So that would be a fairly small workload change, and that was appreciated. But
do these inspections happen every 2 years? Did we change that so they're not annual?
This ordinance the revised ordinance you hopefully will approve tonight, will change it so it's biannual, so it will be every 2 years for inspections of liveaboards only.
Okay.
And at this time, we do not inspect other vessels for sanitation devices, and I'm not sure we would have the authority without an ordinance. I really haven't talked to Rob about that yet, but I think that would be probably the appropriate place. If that was our intention to expand for sanitation device inspections, it should probably be a part of a new local ordinance.
Okay. So we're actually cutting back on that workload for you, but we are also, not we, but there may be thought to expand that back by looking at more kinds of boats.
Yes, we will be.
Which was the discussion?
Yes, one of the benefits of this ordinance is we will be reducing the number of inspections we have to accomplish annually about half. Mm-hmm. And we have never had the staffing to keep up with managing this ordinance, frankly. Mm-hmm. We were forced to take it on in the early 90s by request from Regional Water Quality Control Board to make sure that we were properly regulating liveaboards. And we've struggled to keep up with it. I hope this will allow us to do a better job of managing and then enforcement.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Schultz, were you wanting to say something?
Just that this is the liveaboard ordinance, so vessel habitation we would address in there. If it's sanitation just in general of all vessels, we would look at that under our sanitation section and revise that section instead of trying to put in into the liveaboard.
Okay. Any other comments on this one?
Yeah, I had one question. Mr. Elgert, on page 6, I was asking you earlier, and I couldn't remember. It's 1541.20, the last line. Service fees shall not apply to those permittees berthed at leased sites or moorings where the leaseholder is providing restroom, water, trash services permitted at no cost. Where is that?
We inspect the vessel. pays for the issuance of the permit. There's a second fee that people on city facilities pay. It's an additional service fee on top of the administrative cost. And that's because they use additional services that the city provides in restrooms and trash and pump outs. Those folks who are at Marina Square or the other private marinas, they almost all pay a much higher service fee to that private marina operator for naval boards. Or did you look a little puzzled still?
I was trying to figure out where it was. Thank you.
If I could add a comment too, it's because I know some people are interested in this. So our administrative fee, the one that we charge for processing the permits for naval boards and for the inspection, will need to be adjusted because it is now going to happen every 2 years. And I suggest that I will try to get that on your next meeting if people are interested in that. If not on the next meeting, we'll put an amendment to the master fee schedule to address that fee in the very near future.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Do I hear a motion?
Move approval of A4.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay, this is second reading. Do you have to read it? Okay. At least I asked. Okay. All right. E5, Betty.
This has to do with the educational funds that were spoken to earlier by the principal at Morro Bay High School. And I think that I actually got my questions answered at break, but I thought it was important to bring up that, and in case you don't know, that I found out at break that this is a sum of money that they've been accumulating over time, so it really is part of their money. And I think Ms. Borchard knows that. Looks like she's nodding her head, and I didn't know that. And so it's not like it's been our money. We've just kind of been holding it for them. And I don't really know how much money there is there. And I was glad to see Ms. Burlingame show up so we could ask her.
Good evening. Actually, the City of San Luis Obispo and their agreement with Charter Communications for the Public Education and Government Access had specifically placed percentages of their PEG fee that went to the public, that went to the education and government. The city's agreement doesn't have that kind of split, so it is up to the council whether or not you want to provide a particular amount to the school district for the public part and for the government part. As the school district has not made a request in the past for these funds, and it is to be used for programs that are going to be helping with Morro Bay residents at the high school and the elementary school, staff felt that this was an appropriate use of funds within the guidelines that are set in our franchise agreement and is recommending approval of the request.
Any more discussion? You want to make a motion?
No, I think I get that. And there could be future that if there's no limit to this, they could come back next year, ask for a little bit more.
Correct. They would follow the same process that we had them do this time. If they had a request in the future, they'd provide a request with a proposal for what the funds would be used for, and then the council would make a determination whether they felt it was a worthy request to fulfill.
Okay. And do you know if the principals are comfortable with the recommendation that you're making that we pay it by bill rather than the lump sum of money?
This was made known to the school district prior to the presentation tonight, and I had not heard that they were in disagreement with that. It's up to the amount that they requested, so one of the things that we felt was that if there were changes in prices or if there was some piece of equipment that's listed in the detail that is not available and they have to get something else, this provides the flexibility to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
They're nodding, our school representatives. Okay. You want to go ahead and make the motion?
Yes, if there's no other comment, I move approval of the school district's request for funds from our
PEG access.
Thank you.
Second.
All in favor?
Discussion.
Sorry.
Just one comment. Just wanted to clarify that there's $134,116 in the account. And I would vote.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. And Rick, A9.
A9 from my
side. Yeah, Rick called it first.
Side. Oh, go ahead, Rick.
You know, I just didn't want this to go by without thanking Bill Woodson. Bill didn't know a whole lot about building, I think, when he took this project on, and he self-taught a lot of it.
and he learned a lot of it. And I didn't agree with everything that came out of his mind, but or his mouth, but either one. But he always did what he felt was right, and that's all you can ask of somebody that serves on these boards or this board. And so I commend him for that, and I thank him for his service to the city.
Noah.
Could we, if we did that with other board vacancies, would that extend on through past the planned next interview period, or would we just be filling that vacancy until the next interview period and then probably starting all over again?
You'd fill his term, and I'm not sure. I think his term was rather. I think he had one of the longer terms.
Yeah, I think he's got like 3 years to go.
Yeah, anybody who resigns, that replacement takes over his term and however long length it was. And his term would be for, I think it's 3 more years.
If we chose, though, to just fill it until January, is that an option we would have, or do we have to fill it for the whole 3 years?
You could. I don't think you'd get many people apply for a 4-month trial at it. You know, okay. I mean, but I guess, yeah, you could do that.
She's shaking her head no. Your city clerk is.
He's the city.
I mean, your rules say that your policies and procedures say when a vacancy is filled, it serves for the end of that term. That doesn't mean you couldn't. I mean, you can alter those policies and procedures if you wanted to. I would just say it would be difficult then to fill a position for have someone to go through it and apply and go through the interview process knowing that they will only be on for that short of a period.
I'm comfortable not filling it if Mr. Woodson's waiting until Mr. Lucas gets back from Europe, because that leaves us 4, and I think we've got 6 meetings left in the year, probably.
Mm-hmm. I believe that his letter said that he had terminated as of his writing.
And Mr. Lucas is back, or will be for the next meeting, is what I understand.
Well, let's read the
letter. But if we end up short a commissioner, then they only have 3, or if they have a 2-2 vote, they can't move forward on any issues. So I would move that we open the position.
But you won't be able to appoint them until Mr. Lucas is back anyways.
Yes, we can. That's
up
to us.
I mean, if he's already back, then it doesn't.
It doesn't. It'd still be a 4. The advisory board will only be 4. So if they have a 2-2 vote, that's a failing vote every time. Mm-hmm. So I would move that we would direct staff to advertise the position.
Is that a motion?
Yes, it is.
Well, I would agree.
Okay, wait, let's get a second.
I'll
second it.
Okay.
Thank you.
I would agree, but you know, his term doesn't expire until January of 2012.
Right.
So I'm for not putting in somebody in there for a couple of months. I'm for filling it to the end of his term.
And that is the motion.
Okay.
Her motion was to replace Bill Woodson. Yeah.
To advertise his advisory position to the end of the term.
Till the end of the term.
Yes.
Yeah.
As a point of discussion, would there be benefit to address, I believe the other vacancy is on the Rec and Parks Committee. Would we be benefited by including that in the effort?
How long is that
there was
term?
Only,
what's the open term?
It was
on
only
one?
Till the end of the year.
What is it?
You know, I'm not too sure what that term is on the vacant position that we have. I think it's longer than just at the end of the year.
Oh, I thought it was only the one left, one remaining. We appointed 2 people, and I thought that we didn't fill it because it was only remaining until January. I thought that was why.
I don't remember
why we didn't.
Either. Well, we can find out if their term ends in January. Do you want to include them, or do you only want to include them if it goes longer than January?
Only if it goes longer than January.
Okay. So you want to? So we're adding that to the motion then?
I'm adding that to the motion.
And I will add that to my second.
And if there happen to be any other board vacancies that extend beyond. Oh, that is
it.
Okay, great.
Okay. All right, so is the motion clear to everyone? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Do we need to set a date right now for the hearing so we can advertise? Can we?
So we just do it prior to a meeting in September.
I mean, the sooner the better for advertising.
You mean date for interview?
But yeah.
If you want to do it now, you can do it later. It doesn't need to be
later?
By motion. A date doesn't need to be set for certain.
We just do it at the end of the night?
I'm sorry, what?
Should we just do it at the end of the night when we do our future agenda stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, we could do that. Okay.
Thank you.
All righty. A10, Betty.
This is the authorization to fill the associate planner position. And I'm going to vote no on this. I think we're, as we know, in tough positions. I know the money is there because the person has left us. But as our workload is down, as I stated the last time this came before us, I think this is not a justifiable expense.
Okay.
To piggyback on that comment, this, I think, is an example of why I'm really interested to find some advancement in our conversations about the two-tiered benefits, because it does seem like we're going to be getting further and further into other hirings, and
we provided to the council on this this fee was in April of 2008. Since that time, we've only had one project come through in that caseload period of time, and that was the case at 560 Bernardo. Our old appeal fees used to be 50% of the base fee. There is a lower amount of money that we're collecting now that is subsidized by the general fund. That's been the way it's been since we initiated this program in 2007. I can get into more detail on that if you'd like. I've attached the previous staff report. But at this point, we're recommending that the council receive and file this report.
Okay. Any comments or questions?
I would also ask if council wants us to continue to bring this item back or just wait till council wants to reassess it.
I'll follow up on that. The other recommendations had to continue with the update. This one had, we specifically omitted that part of the recommendation, so I beat Rob to it.
Any other comments, or we didn't want to just have a motion?
I'll move that the city council receive and file the report and thank them for their work.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Item C2, presentation on implementation. Oh, God, we're finally getting to this. Oh, my gosh. On goals A and B from the Management Partners Goal Setting Workshop.
Yes, and thank you. I'm very pleased to provide this report to you. I was going to go through the dates of when we pushed it on, but happy to be here to report this. And I have made a couple of amendments to the report, so I'm going to go through it briefly for you. As you'll recall, we held a goal-setting workshop on February 17th and 18th, and that entailed talking about the goals from last year that we'd made progress on, as well as additional goals for this this year. After the conclusion of the goal-setting workshop, the council identified 5 priority goals, 9 other goals, and 2 other carryover goals from the process the year prior. And then at your March 9th meeting, you ended up unanimously adopting the goal-setting workshop outcomes for 2009. You asked us to come back with goal A and B and provide some additional information, and so we provided that to you not only in the staff report but as well in a document that's been highlighted about with some areas where we've made some progress and a timeline for upcoming items. So I'll stick to the staff report, and you can look at the additional information for further clarification. Goal A was to develop and maintain a structurally sustainable budget, and under each goal you put what success looks like for those goals. And number 10, under what success looks like under Goal A, was develop a schedule for assessing departments. You may recall that we brought to you the police department with the sheriff proposal that was completed in June of 09, and I've added the other departments there, and I will tell you that I've changed the order just slightly based on information, and we've added the harbor department for the next department to be assessed, and that would be assessed basically in a 3-month period from starting in September of 09. The next department that I would suggest is the public services department, which would begin in approximately January of 10, followed by the recreation and parks department, information technology and city attorney, administrative services, and lastly the fire department, because I felt like we've given that department a pretty hard look with our CAL FIRE review. And if we move on through the staff report, what success looks like, number 2, was provide information so the city council can decide whether to establish tiered benefits for new hires. That was what success looked like under Goal A. Again, And we currently are in progress with this item. At the June 22, 2009 meeting, you met in closed session to continue your efforts to cut personnel costs through labor negotiations. The action out of that meeting, as you'll recall, was that you directed staff to contact Morro Bay's represented employee groups, the police officers, the firefighters, and the SEIU, Service Employees International Union, and ask them to meet and confer in regard to their contracts. We currently have active contracts with all those groups. Potential discussion items for that meet and confer were two-tiered PERS retirement formulas, health care dollars, reduction of work week, extending closure on holidays, and mandatory furloughs. We have contacted, and we did contact soon after that, all three groups, and we have received a response from both the Firefighters and the Police Officers Association declining to meet and confer at this time. We are opening up negotiations with the POA, I believe, in January because their contract expires next year. And I believe that SEIU has agreed to sit down to the table. And we're still waiting for confirmation on that. It doesn't mean that they're agreeing to open up their contract, but they're willing to sit down and talk about what we're interested in. But I still am waiting on confirmation for that. Next, under what success looks like, you ask to present to the City Council a variety of options and correspond recommendations from management partners, what you've done so far, what you were looking for staff to continue to do. And so we're happy to bring that back if that's something that you still are interested in. You also wanted to review the trolley program and the Recreation and Parks Department programs. First, in terms of Recreation and Parks programs, and you were looking at, from what I remember, cost recovery on those. That was also a recommendation in the Management Partners Report. The Council's direction back in August of 2008 was to review to work on this item in 2 to 3 years. If you still are interested in that timeline, we would recommend studying these programs during the 2010-2011 fiscal year. Certainly bringing back a presentation to you sometime in early 2011. In terms of the trolley program, the 2009-2010 budget portrays the trolley program as a non-general fund supported program with funding, as you remember, coming from revenue from advertisements, sponsorships, fares, and the parking and lieu contribution. You may want to provide further direction to staff in regard to the funding scenario for next fiscal year, 2010-2011, for the trolley, and we would be bringing that back to you during your budget discussions in April of 2010. Goal B was overall to reduce overall administrative costs, and what we're looking for, what we'd anticipate with that item is looking at all those items when we assess each department. So those items, what success looks like under that goal would be calculating benefits and personnel expenses, explore alternative work schedules, providing total staffing costs, all things that we look at when we look at each department, and it gets back to your first goal about assessing departments. So with that, we've attached the secondary document, which is the goal-setting workshop outcomes for 2009, and we've gone through that document, and we've read, highlighted things that have been completed or are a few things that are in progress, a couple things that you've decided you're not interested in. And then lastly, we have a timeline, and the reason we put together this timeline for you is to try to coordinate things and look at workloads and make sure that everything wasn't due in the same month. And to move the work out throughout the year, and we feel pretty comfortable with how things are moved out. You'll see that the red was the original timeline, and then we've revised those timelines a couple times because the staff report has been pushed back. The green is the new revised timeline, the revised timeline for August of 2009. The yellow was your revised time in July of 2009, and you can see there's a couple of things that are significantly different between the yellow and the green. That was just staff re-looking at what we were doing and how we were presenting it. So I think with that, what I'm looking for is your direction on, number one, I've provided some timelines to you. Is the council generally happy with those timelines? Would you like to move things around? And, again, looking for just a balanced workload for us to complete these things and bring them back to you in a timely fashion. That concludes my staff report, and I'm happy to answer questions or provide input.
Okay. I'm going to start with a couple questions. And this is on your number two. The schedule for assessing the departments. Mm-hmm. It seems to me in previous meetings and discussions that we've been told that the information technology and the city attorney are almost done. Why are we not putting those first?
They're partially done. There's not a lot of work to do. And in that same vein, I think we've talked about a little bit at the council level. There's not a lot of money in either of those areas, and so we don't anticipate huge savings. I can certainly bring those back sooner than later, if that's what you're interested in.
And then my other question was, we've also had some. Mentioned in the management partners report about possibly combining fire and harbor. So if we're going to do that, why would we not look at those together instead of four apart?
Well, that's one of the reasons we moved harbor up. You may be having some changes in your harbor department. We've talked about combining harbor and fire. It's probably going to be a closer look at the harbor department than at the fire department. Certainly we could bring fire department up.
I was just thinking if we are thinking of combining them, that wouldn't we do that together?
You certainly could.
And then also the maintenance consolidation, how is that coming along?
We've got all the information. We just haven't had any time to review the documents.
Okay, so that'll actually be on top of everything.
Everything's turned in. And that's really going to have that's going to certainly have or may have an impact on your harbor department, your public services department, and possibly your recreation and parks department, because those are the three departments that did the survey.
Right. Well, I guess that would be one of my thoughts, is if we could combine the harbor and the fire. If we're going to be looking at the potential of combining them anyway, we should put the studies closer together. Yes, Rob?
I certainly think as you look at harbor, yes, that will look at combining fire with it. I think what her intention was not to look at fire as a separate entity standing alone, but as you look at harbor and all the current duties and responsibilities they take on and what other ones that fire would be looked at, that joining part of it, but not as a separate
entity. And the IT department was a question, I think, of whether or not we were looking at in-house or outsourcing. So I'm interested in still pursuing that and not waiting a year from now to bring that back, because that possibly is also a revenue savings or not opportunity. So I'd be interested in looking at those two items shifting around a little bit.
Okay. Noah, how do you feel about that? Let's keep our discussion to just this right now, and we'll get this result, and then we'll move on to other things.
The adjustments with the harbor department working more closely with fire sound good to me. I think the comments about the maintenance consolidation, in my opinion, would be important to be led with, just because of the influence that would have on all of the other departments if we find something there that we really think is a good thing. So I think that should be perhaps one of the top, and generally I would hope that we would address items that give us the best option for finding potentially some savings by the mid-year, probably not, but at least by the end of the year. So just in case things with the economy and our projected revenue streams are as bad as some have said they could be, we have some options to play with. Potentially. So that's a real general statement that I just wanted to bring into the mix. And with that, I'll pass it on.
Could I also add that in that list, I'd like to just possibly see that we just move up Public Works and move up Parks and Recs, because I think waiting that far out for the 2 or 3 years where they pushed out Parks and Recs for possible cost recoveries and things, where we had the discussion during budget about teen center and things where they should be addressing a 25% to 50% cost recovery where it's been zero for the last 8 years, are things that we do need to address in some of these things and not wait that far down the road to be looking at. So I would like to see those, if we switch harbor down, for them to just bump up, maybe in the order she has them, but just move up in the timeline.
That's probably the biggest issue, and I know it's a lot of guesswork, but which departments do we think have the potential to give us the greatest savings? Because those are the ones we should focus
public
on.
Public Works and Parks and Recs, I'm thinking.
Well, but combining fire and harbor, that could really be some big savings, too. So it's – and I don't know. I don't know if we decide that ourselves or take staff's recommendation on that. Can anybody have a crystal ball on that?
But I think with the fire station being built and the contracts and things that they're under, as far as that's more staffing. have an enterprise fund.
Actually, we would be combining some of those major positions, and that could be a major savings if we were to do that.
Madam Mayor, just as clarification, there is the when we're looking at Recreation and Parks Department in terms of assessing departments, we're specifically looking at calculating benefits and personnel expenses, alternate work schedules, providing total staffing costs, as opposed to looking at cost recovery, which is a different item on your goal setting. So I just want to make sure maybe you had that clear, but I want to make sure those are two different things. We're looking at how the department structure versus cost recovery, two separate things. Council's indicated they want to look at both of them, and there are different places on the timeline. Okay, let's go to this side. Rick?
It's my opinion that Harbor and Fire are by far the most daunting on this as far as time and effort on your part. Parks and Rec, you know, I think that can be done in a fairly quick time frame as compared to Harbor and Fire. So it's all about which do you want to do first. I can go either way with it. There's pros and cons to both plans. Park and Rec being a quicker deal, Fire and Harbor potential bigger savings, but more staff time. So I can go either way on these.
Betty?
My thought was from a discussion that we had in closed session that there was reason to maybe want to move Fire up with Harbor rather than have Harbor come down with Fire. So, and that may be something that we want to let staff have flexibility with. Regarding the others, I don't know that it really matters to me. What matters to me is the kind of assessment we're doing. And I guess I was a little surprised when you brought back the police one the other meeting, because I thought it was going to be, and this is my fault for not paying attention to the language, that it was going to be as much a program evaluation as it was just a staffing evaluation. And so I'm a little disappointed because I thought Section B was reducing administrative costs by restructuring. So I don't know how we're going to have a fairly lengthy staff report. In fact, I'm a little bit concerned about just the daunting task of public services in general. It's going to be a huge undertaking. So if there's something specific you're looking for... I was looking for options. You know, we know you can't... I felt that, and you did what it was said, was to come back with what's, you know, how much would it be for this, this, and this, but there wasn't anything like, if we do remove the commander position, what happens? I mean, there was no substance there. And you had asked for more time to do that, and council didn't grant you that. But that's what I'm looking for in all these departments. How do you rearrange personnel and ergo eliminate positions to make it more financially feasible? And what does that do to program? Well, and I didn't get any of that out of the police department, so now I'm like, oh my gosh, are we not going to get any of that in any of the department?
I would disagree on that. I did get that out of the police department, and I think our decision was we didn't want to eliminate the commander position, that we felt that they were already on a minimal staff for a police department that we need for our community. So I thought that one was fine. And I think the fire department is pretty much the same thing. We really can't do with any fewer. We need more. So what I was looking at this, and what I was thinking was maintenance consolidation first, because we're pretty much almost ready with that one.
We have the data.
Right.
I hesitate to say we're almost ready.
Now you can start doing the analysis.
We have the data.
Now that you have the time, you can start doing the analysis on that. And it seems to me that would be a reorganization of structure there, because you're going to have people perhaps sharing jobs that were departmentalized before. So that was my concern on the first one. And then second, I thought I was looking at Harbor and Fire as a combination, because that would be a major restructuring too. I was kind of saving public services because I know it's going to be horrendous. They're not overstaffed at the moment, so I figured it's not going to hurt to wait a little bit on that one. But I know that one's going to take the most time. So that's kind of where I was going, was putting maintenance first, Harbor and Fire second, and then the others based on whatever order you feel. How does anybody else feel? Okay. Is that all right with you?
Well, what are we going to be getting out of it? I guess I'm still back at my point. You know, I want to know what I'm getting.
Well, for with maintenance, what they've done is they've figured out where everybody's spending their time now with the different maintenance and the different departments. Now it's a matter of analyzing that and saying, okay, where are we repeating? Where do we have the same person going to the same place at different times of the day or whatever?
I get that.
So that's your structure. So that, I would think, would be an easy next step as far as, you know, we've already got the data.
And easy in terms of the data is there, so you want her to finish that task.
So now
task.
You can do the results, yes.
Okay.
Right. So then the next one that I would like to see us look at is the combination of fire and harbor to see if that's viable. And if so, that's a restructuring that we should start to do before the next budgeting session so that we can put that into that budgeting discussion. The others are a little bit farther out there other than the IT, which is just a matter of, you know, is it going to cost us more to have it in-house or not?
And I think that was Ms. Borchardt's concern. Where can we move that one up?
Right.
Yes. Briefly, one of my thoughts with the harbor is that we realize there's probably going to be a shift there, and I would like to see that our timing with that evaluation coincides. So if we identify some options, that it's working cleanly with the potential adjustment with the personnel there.
Right.
And it gives us that opening at the correct time. It would be the number one concern I'd have with the harbor and its timing.
And Councilmember Wynholtz alluded to that, and it's one of the reasons we moved the harbor department up. So I would at this point, I would say we'll certainly bring back a proposal would bring back maintenance and look at harbor and fire and try to get an information technology and city attorney by the end of the by the end of the fiscal year.
Yeah, that'd be good. That sounds good to me.
And then I think
everybody like that idea.
Okay. I think it's important that we will bring you back, you know, status reports if we if I get into a situation where it's just not, you know, there's a time frame issue, I'll let you know.
Okay. All right. So any other items that people want to discuss, or are we happy with the report?
I want to talk about number five, the trolley review, because I think we were looking for a ridership audit this fall. So I don't want that to get too far away. And if that can be combined, or are they two just totally different items?
Combined with what?
The trolley review plus
the
trolley
parks.
Audit.
Oh, and the trolley audit, okay.
I'm on page four, number three.
Yeah.
If I recall, we were bringing back, we're currently doing an onboard survey. I think Janine has started that about how people are riding. We brought back to you the numbers from last trolley season. I believe at a city council meeting. We're doing an onboard survey now. My thought was that this was particularly, and if you're looking at something else, I certainly want to know. But
money. In answer to your other questions, we will be coming forward with additional surveys. And this year we expanded the survey information, but I'm not quite sure what the timing is. I think it does make sense to do it at the end of the season so we have season results and not interrupt anything in the middle of our peak season.
Are we ready to move on from that specific topic?
No. I want to make sure that I'm sorry. But I want to make sure I've got clear direction. So we're looking at ridership now. The funding issues for this fiscal year are you've authorized those. We're going to be coming back at the end of the summer or after with ridership details, and then you're looking at the funding for the trolley for next season in your budget for 2010-2011. And I think our recommendation to surplus the trolley is on either the next agenda or agenda in September. So is that what the council's after in that respect?
Moving on, one of the things that I'd like to maintain on the radar, it's not as much savings, but more along the lines of potentially redirecting some funds locally, is the conversation about the local contractor preference mechanism that we've worked on to potentially enhance, and I just wanted to make sure that doesn't fall off the radar.
No, it hasn't fallen off the radar, and it might be good to bring back an update of the ordinance as I am and just make sure we're confirming what's the highest priority, because right now it's medical marijuana dispensaries, there's massage, there's tattoo, there's that, and there's about three or four others. So it might be good to touch base with you at our next meeting and say these are the things I'm working at, making sure your priority is in right order, and that maybe it has changed a little bit just to make sure we're on, because that's one of them, but it wasn't on as high as the other ones based on previous comments.
Well, I'm not sure how the rest of the council feels, but I'm really anxious to get some movement on that.
I think it would be a good idea to touch base on because the workload is, I think, on everybody, and especially me right now, kind of high, and it might be good to touch base with council on those items and just get priority lists also.
Okay. All right. Anything else on this one?
I'll assume with the two-tiered benefit conversation that will come forward as we get the chance to talk more with the different groups.
As I stated, the POA and the firefighters have declined the ability to meet and confer, and that is certainly a meet and confer item. If we have the chance to meet and confer with SEIU, that's certainly on the table. Otherwise, it will be held off until negotiating next time, which will be police in January, February of 2010. And everybody else, January, February of 2011. But we certainly understand it's a priority to council. And as well, we'll keep you updated what's happening statewide and actually countywide on two-tiered benefit issues as well.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So move to approve item C2 as per discussed changes.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Consideration of the city's co-sponsorship of events. Joe. You have to take over. I'm employed by the Bird Festival. It's one of the events being discussed. I have to leave the podium.
And since you don't have any economic interest in the item, you actually have to leave the room altogether.
Okay. Item D1 is regarding consideration of the city's co-sponsorship of events. Mr. Woods.
Good evening, Council. D1 is a conversation regarding co-sponsored programs. Back in the mid-90s, the city manager approved some co-sponsored events, three events particularly, that were held in city facilities: the Morro Bay Winter Bird Festival, the Morro Bay Jazz Festival, and the Teach Foundation Telethon Fundraiser. The events were eligible because of the council's direction to get some activities during the off season. And in January, the Winter Bird Festival seemed like a very good idea, and it turned out to be an extremely good idea to help that program along because they've been very successful. They've also they bring in folks for multiple days. This starts in about Thursday for staff to prep, and people are coming in on Thursday, and the program's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and even have some programs that leave for field trips on Monday morning. So to have the have a program that brings in people on the off season multiple days for a program is something that was very desirable. Currently, the Winter Bird Festival and the Teach Foundation are the only two co-sponsored events that are continued. The Morro Bay Jazz Festival, the program didn't sustain itself, and after a couple of visits, the promoters and those involved just kind of let it die. So the success has been from the Winter Bird Festival, and in turn we get advertisement and on the billing as far as a co-sponsorship. And then at the event, like the Teach Foundation, if you've ever watched the telethon or been here, our banner is up in the background, and obviously people understand that we're trying to support that program through co-sponsorship, and then their revenues in turn would come back to the community, and that's the cycle in which we've tried to enjoy. Staff has outlined several programs here, your co-sponsored programs, for what the fees would be as a normal nonprofit rate. And then we put in the cost for the event if it's a co-sponsored program. And you'll see the difference there for the Morro Bay Photo Expo. The difference would be $845. The Winter Bird Festival is a little larger because you've got multiple days, a lot of different rooms, most all day long. So the program for a nonprofit group would be about $3,500. The nonprofit, or actually the co-sponsored program, we charge them a little over $1,000, so the difference is about $2,500. The Teach Foundation, the normal fees were $1,000, the co-sponsorship's $340, The difference is about 700 in Dahlia days, which was voted down. The difference was about $127. Again, staff and council, I think, are on the same page, looking for multiple day programs that have overnight stays to help increase not only the sales tax but also the TOT. And right now, staff would recommend, after the consideration, council would consider one of the three options provided for you for the future of co-sponsored events, as well as the continuation of the existing co-sponsored programs. And you have those options. That concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have at this time.
Thank you. Mr. Grantham?
It was kind of surprising for me to find out that the council had no say on these previously approved co-sponsorships. It was a unilateral decision by a former city manager. What I would like to see done, and I think this is a perfect thing for it, I'd like to see this go to our Park and Rec Commission, give them something to do. That's what they're there for. Have them draw us up a policy with recommendations and bring us back some direction to consider. A couple of these are fairly substantial contributions that we're doing, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't, and I'm not saying they're not deserving, but I'm saying that it needs to be done the right way. And, you know, here we are getting requests from other just as worthy organizations, and we've said no to them. That's why I asked when the Bird Festival was coming up. It's in January, and that's just a few short months away. I'd like to leave everything status quo in the meantime until the Rec and Park Commission has time to go ahead and go over this and draw us up some policy that we can consider to make a good decision.
Ms. Borchard?
Yes, and Mr. Grantham, I think I agree with you on that. And it was recommended that the fees stay intact through this upcoming year's events. Certainly when we addressed Dahlia Day's request and denied that, it was a difference of $100, yet we fund a different event that's a local event, and our co-sponsorship is $340, you know, saving them $700. So it's a lot larger, and that's for a school-sponsored function. Mr. Woods, if I could ask you a question, please. What other organizations or what other events, do we co-sponsor?
The only other co-sponsored event that I can think of, and I apologize for not getting any time at the city manager's office, is the Morro Bay Community Foundation. We do work with them, not so much as a co-sponsorship, but as a partner, because all the money they raise goes back into our scholarships. So that would be the only one that would be really out on the edge. All the other special events, such as Music Festival, Harbor Festival, Avocado Margarita Festival, Kite Festival, all those that are put on by the Chamber or by David Owens and his nonprofit group are solely that, and they are not city-sponsored programs. They are issued a public area use permit. They are charged fees for their permit. They are charged use fees, if that's appropriate, and they are also charged city services post-event, provided whatever they use. So if there's two policemen for 6 hours, I'll get an invoice from police, and we'll gather all of them up and then invoice the event post-event. So those type of events that are coming to this city are not city-sponsored events, but they're city-approved, and I would imagine, I'm going on a limb, that maybe it's because they deemed it public equipment that was already paid for by the community, and so we're double billing them. I'm just going on a limb on that one, but I would imagine that policy was to provide reimbursements for city services, not for the equipment that we used to provide that services.
Thank you. Mr. Grantham, would you, if you're going to make a motion, entertain including Parks and Recs, giving us a breakdown, including that, because that was $15,000 to $25,000, just so that we could keep it equitable to look at, you know, if we're going to subsidize or co-sponsor events, so we have an accountability for, you know,
either that, or I'd be glad to let you make the motion.
Well, I'm just, because if we're going to support the Winter Bird Festival for co-sponsoring the difference of $2,500 in fees, which I'm not saying that's good or bad. I just would want to equate that the same as if we're giving staff time to set up barricades and things like that for one of the other festivals or something, because to me that's the same thing in lieu of. I would just like to see how it balances out.
Let's keep that with our discussion and see what Mr. Smuckler has to say, if that's okay.
Okay, thank you. I'm inclined to go along with what Mr. Grantham's suggestion. I think this is a good issue for the Rec and Parks Committee to work with. At this point, I've thought about my decision personally with the Dahlia Days and looking at the numbers here. And also the benefits that we receive from these events, I'm comfortable with us proceeding with these four events for the year as it's been laid out, especially as I've come to understand more about how they really are paying for the direct costs that the city is incurring from this relationship. And I definitely would not want to do anything that would impact the plans that the Winter Bird Festival and the Teach Foundation have laid out, assuming that things will continue as they have in the past. And I'm very intrigued by the possibilities of the Photo Expo and would like to see that get a chance to move forward and prosper. But, again, I think it's important for us to ask the Rec and Parks Committee to really look at the future and down the road, so we're not locked into a policy that's vague and getting ourselves in a position where we see many other groups applying when we can't afford it or we don't have a good vetting mechanism for deciding what's the most appropriate.
So something fair across the board.
Yeah. So it sounds like maybe, if I could butt in for a second, that Ms. Borchardt has proposed some guidelines, and you've proposed some guidelines. Maybe we can make a list of things that we want the Parks and Rec to address, and some of those would be?
Well, I think Carla's got it, and if you want to go ahead and make your motion, I'll be glad to second it, Carla.
But I'll be throwing some things in, too. Do you want to hear them first? Okay. Besides the items that you've mentioned, I'd like them to address whether it's a first-time program or not. I think that's a valid item to address. The number of days they're here, if that's a criteria, whether it's a local event or not. And by that, I'm not sure what I mean, but like the foundation, the Dahlia Days, is it because it's quasi-city related, is that a special criteria or does that not make a difference? I'm just raising the question.
Well, and do you want to consider nonprofit versus
And that's another consideration then, too, profit or nonprofit. So, Mr. Woods, are you making this list for us? Or do I need to make the list?
Yes, ma'am. I'm making the list.
Great. So we're talking about whether it's a first-time event, how many days are here, whether it's a local, quasi-city-related event, whether it's nonprofit or not. How do you quantify your...
If we're going to co-sponsor events such as the Winter Bird Festival mm-hmm. or Teach Foundation, I just want it to be equitable mm-hmm. In the co-sponsorship, the same as it would be if we are giving in-kind services to the other festivals and events.
So you want to look at in-kind services?
Yeah, I think what you're looking at is you know, there's permit fees, and that's just a component. Whereas, let's say Harbor Festival might have fees, but they want to use our equipment, our ladder truck to hang the flag and stuff like that, that I don't think Dahlia Days uses. So you want to look at the entire package to see what those entire costs are.
And you want it broken down according from equipment versus personnel.
Well, however Parks and Recs would like to address it. It was brought to us at budget that it was $15,000 to $25,000, mm-hmm. and I would just like, if we're going to address this mm-hmm. here about mm-hmm. the co-sponsorships and this amount of money, I'd like to include, if Parks and Recs can do that, mm-hmm. then what that same would be for that. And I'm not, you know, I just would like to see so
sure.
we can keep it equitable.
Sure.
For all the organizations sure. that are requesting from the city, because
it probably would go the way of the jazz festival at that point, and it wouldn't be able to continue as it's organized, and probably would fade out on its own. But it would be interesting for them to, I think, consider that as a component to give us that opportunity to say, hey, these funds are being well managed, and there's a potential for them to continue in a good way into the future if we think we can do that.
Can I interject a point of clarification, please? I had mentioned two things that I wanted to make sure that we were on the same track. Groups do use barricades, but non-city time. They address public services, and then they go pick up their own barricades to set them out on their own and come back.
I'm not being specific.
Okay.
I'm just leaving it
I just
here.
Want to make sure that...
Yeah, I wasn't trying to be specific. I was for an example was
okay.
all.
Okay, but I wanted to make a point that we do... push that responsibility onto the groups whenever we can, and mm-hmm. we try to minimize our staff. And the fourth event, which is Dahlia Days, has not been approved. But they did go forward and get an application to get funding from the Morway Follies. So there's some revenues going their way from the Follies, but I don't think we want to include them in the existing because they weren't approved as a co-sponsored event.
And it sounds like they're taken care of. How about the expo?
The expo is in front of you this evening.
So we need to make that decision after we make this motion? Sounds like it.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Grantham, anything you want to add to the list?
No, I'm good.
Okay. I'd like to add that to let the commission know that, at least for me, and I need to see what others think, that the money here is the bottom line. That when you talk about fair and equitable, if we're popping in $2,000, they're only popping in $1,000. That's not equitable either to the city or to the other groups. So I may be looking at a percentage thing here, not just a flat number, because I don't want us to get caught short any more than I want one organization versus another organization to get short. Is that okay with you guys? So with that, and we have a list, who would like to make a motion?
I move that the City Council send this issue to the Recreation and Parks Commission for review and recommendations, returning it to the City Council in September as per our direction.
Is that a good date for you, Mr. Woods?
No, I just was reviewing my schedule. I will be here early September. I do plan on being out of town on the 28th of September, which is your last meeting, and it would be pretty hard. I can get this to the first Thursday of September for our commission to review, but I would have a hard time turning it around for your first meeting. If I could ask for a little leniency,
may I amend that to October?
That would be wonderful.
Okay, and the second's coming from?
I second it.
Thank you. Any more? We're good? All in favor?
Aye.
Mr. Go ahead. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? It's unanimous. Thank you.
And the second motion?
Oh, yes, that's right. Thank you. The second motion. Can she come back in? No.
No.
Sorry.
In fact, I would, you know, although it's semantics, I would suggest if you're this item is not designated as specifically granting a city event for the photo days, if it's possible to bring it back at the next meeting, I'd rather do it that so it's on there. I mean, that's what we've done for other events. So,
and that way,
the mayor could participate in it at that point in time.
Okay.
If there's enough time for that. I mean, I don't know when the event is.
It's the end of October?
Okay. Yeah, we can bring it. We can put it on your next agenda.
Okay.
So and I'll let them know.
Are we all comfortable with that?
Yeah. You want to keep on going while she's out there and just leave her out of the rest of the meeting?
Madam Mayor, would you like to return?
Co-sponsorship of the photo.
Co-sponsorship
yeah.
photo.
Yeah. Okay. Next, designation of a voting delegate and alternate voting delegate at the League of California Cities 2009 Annual Conference Business Meeting. Who's going to go? That's the question first. I can't. Is anybody going to go? Are you going this time, Rob?
I'll be available if no one else wants to go.
Okay. Were you planning to go?
I've signed up, but I'm still looking at budget and scheduling and all that other stuff there. I know the day before is the day up in Sacramento for the Water Board to consider the ones through cooling regulations. So I was looking at that also.
You'd be there. Oh, yeah, no, it's in San Jose, though. Yeah,
yeah. But at least you're up that way. You're closer.
Yeah.
So I just haven't.
Okay, shall we designate
Rick?
Betty?
Betty?
Rick?
Either one of us.
You want to go, Mr. Grantham? I'm sorry.
It doesn't hurt to have two people go, especially if you're just going up for the day.
You declare alternate.
Right,
Well, you know, if you want to choose someone to go, let them go. If they something happens they can't go, let the alternate go.
Okay. All right. So would we like Betty to be the primary and Rick the alternate? Does that sound good? I'll make that a motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. That was easy.
Let me know.
You got it, sir.
Okay. Gosh. Did
Future agenda items?
Future agenda items. How exciting. I had one this time, too. Go ahead, Betty.
I have a couple. One is the email that we received from the city attorney regarding the item that he mentioned a minute ago regarding the Water Board draft guidelines for the once-through cooling. Is there time to review that at the next meeting?
Yes. Yes, because it is. I mean, comments aren't due till September 30th, but I certainly think it'd be a good idea to have any comments in the board's hands before the 15th. You could even put supplemental comments in afterwards.
Okay.
But certainly, yes, if you do think it's an important issue that we want to weigh in, then yes, I can bring back a summary of the guidelines and get recommendations on how to respond. So
okay.
It's an important issue. If council does, then we'll bring it back next time.
Is our support?
Yeah, I'd be interested in getting the details. I think it is important to the community, whatever we decide.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Or just at least to hear what the state's thinking about. The second one has to do with state parks. They have been very elusive about what they're doing with their parks. They're waiting for others to come talk to them if we want to have any input or not, if we want to suggest some way to handle that. So they're not saying Morro Bay or the Strand. They're just waiting to see who contacts them. And so my question is, do we want to contact them? Do we want to suggest that we encourage a private person like Morro Dunes try to get the Strand as well? Do we want to look at us trying to do that? I mean, do we want to have that discussion is my question.
I guess my concern would be it's sort of like, you know, who's going to let the shoe drop? That you don't want to go and say, okay, we're going to take this over, and then have the state say, oh, good, we don't have to worry about that one, if they were indeed going to keep it up. So I don't know.
That's assuming that they would even entertain our proposal from us. So I guess the question is, do we want to consider making a proposal, or do we just want to stay out of it? Yeah. And that would be the discussion we would have.
Yeah.
Who contracts the Sierra Alto campgrounds and all those little parks, do you know?
Sierra Alto, I think, is in national, isn't it?
No.
Is it
state? No, the one up. Some of the private companies contracts all those.
But I think it's done through a government.
Sierra
Alto
National Forest or something.
It's a, something like that.
The campgrounds are all privately run.
They are, but because it's contracted out, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, is that what you're saying? Yeah. 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 I don't know who the company is.
Well, does anybody want to have that discussion yet, or are we going
to
wait?
I'd like to wait a little bit.
Waiting would be okay, but it is a really big issue, and it seems like updates as more information comes out would be a minimum that we should really be on top of. And you know, it's really interesting to think about being proactive there. It's something I hadn't considered at this point. I think if there's a chance, we'd want to do everything we could to make sure the outcomes is to the best of our intentions and needs. So,
yeah, I don't know if waiting's a possibility. Maybe what we need to do is get Mr. Franco in here and ask him, or ask Mr. Woods to contact him, or something like that.
Yes. Since it's a future agenda item, what you really want to do is there support for staff to bring back a status report of where the state parks is and whether there's any action we should be taking now. That's really
that
the issue. And staff could put that as a future agenda item. If there's not support, then Betty could do that same staff report on her own and where the status is and bring it forward, or if there's support from two other council members, and staff would work on that and bring back any other information, and that might be contacting Franco.
There's nothing wrong with being ready. So if we put it on the future agenda item list as an update and what's happening with the state parks, then if there is action needed to be taken, we can do it.
I would think that depending on the contact with Mr. Franco, it would depend on how soon it needs to get on the agenda.
I'll support that.
Okay. Is this
an update on the state park? Status of state park closures, potential state park closures.
Yeah. You need one that works.
I did talk to Mr. Franco last week, and at that point he didn't have any further information about closures. But we're happy to hear that Mr. Woods is looking at that. I thought we wanted to have this little jump-ahead look to see where you guys are headed, to see if we're in the same direction that you are. So maybe we could get that on the next agenda, Ms. Luker? I think that was a memo. I think it's on your agenda plan. I got it as a memo. And, okay. And I got a brain thought when we talked about that, and we'll get that done to you.
14th. Okay, thanks.
And out to you. Thank you for reminding us.
Yeah. That's what we're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Carla suggested maybe before our meeting on the 14th.
14th or the 28th. Is that enough time?
Are we talking August?
No.
September?
September.
And what day of the week is that?
Monday. That's our regular
council meeting.
Regular
Monday?
Yeah.
For the advisory appointment.
Were we not going to have closed session that day?
September.
Oh, yeah, we will.
I thought. Of September.
It's kind of far out.
The 28th? That's September?
It's a month.
Listening, what, Mr. Schultz?
Well, I need to advertise how many times do you want me to advertise?
So is the 28th better, Bridget?
Once or twice. Do you want me to put it in the Tribune and the Baking News? How do you want me to go about it?
Mm-hmm.
That would be good.
Well, I would say twice in both publications.
Is that standard? Is that what you usually do?
Well,
what do you usually do to advertise for interviews? Because I don't want to spend a whole... I mean, those are expensive.
What's your hunch?
I put it in the Bay News twice, maybe the Tribune once.
Yeah. I think that's good.
We'll look at what we've done in the past and bring it back for the 28th.
Okay.
Or we'll interview on the 28th.
Thank
and
you.
We may have a closed session, so we might need to do the 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock.
Okay.
28th of September.
All right.
Anything else before we go to our closing quote? Rick?
Well, it's a long one, so get comfortable.
Okay.
You cannot help the poor by destroying the rich. You cannot strengthen the weak by weakening the strong. You cannot bring about prosperity by discouraging thrift. And you cannot lift the wage earner up by pulling the wage payer down. You cannot further the brotherhood of man by inciting class hatred. And you cannot build character and courage by taking away people's initiative and independence. You cannot help people permanently